The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We have our next guest in the studio just arrived. We are happy to welcome him here, and he's promoting Fighting With My Family. And he is a director and producer of the
film.
And writer as well, and one of the co-creators of The Office. And let's just welcome him.
A ton of stuff.
Stephen Merchant is here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Stephen, good morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Yeah, we're happy to have you in.
Are we live?
We are live.
Yes. I just wanted to check because I get very foul-mouthed in this time of morning.
Well, you're a veteran of radio. You've been on radio.
I love radio.
And you love radio. And in fact, even while you were achieving success with TV shows and so on and so forth, you returned because you loved it. We were over in England for an Eagles game. They're playing over there, the football team here. But radio is... While it's the same, there are differences. And have you noticed dramatic differences? Or what were the differences between American radio?
One of the great pleasures of radio, as you know, is that you don't need to dress up.
Or
shave or even put pants on in the morning.
Yes.
You can just stagger in.
Showers are optional.
Showers are very much optional. And also what I love about it is it's very immediate, right? You can say something now, you can get responses immediately on the text on the Twitter. It feels much more interactive. It feels conversational. I already feel like I know you guys, like we're having a beer in the pub. TV and film and everything, it's all just so much more laborious.
That's
just takes so long to get anything done.
It's funny, Stephen, because at the beginning stages of when I was going to school for communications, and I always wanted to do something comedy-based, and TV and film, that's going to be it. TV and film, that's going to be it. And then just by sort of a circuitous way, ended up doing stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
And then radio, and... I said, well, that's kind of the same vibe between stand-up and radio. Instead, as you said, that immediacy. And you started in stand-up as well.
I did. I'd always wanted to do it. All my heroes were stand-up comics.
Right.
I built myself up psychologically to do it for the first time at university. I was psyched up. I had my little five-minute act.
Yes.
And then it was cancelled. The gig was cancelled. And then I lost my nerve like a fighter pilot who'd been shot down. And I didn't go back to it. I didn't ever try it again for another 2 or 3 years.
Right.
First show I did in Bristol, where my hometown in Bristol in England, killed. Crushed it.
Yes.
I thought, well, this is easy. Following show, died on my arse. Sorry.
No, you can say arse.
And that was largely the experience then I had for many years. It was just either kind of dizzying highs or crushing lows. And it was really tough.
It's a good sort of way to develop skill sets.
And a thick skin.
Mm-hmm. So I've become sort of impervious to, I'm sure, the wealth of criticism that could be levied against me. But the truth of the matter is that it's a good way to learn.
I had someone actually shout once, "Taxi for the comedian," which I thought was just like I didn't know that people actually said that. I thought it was just a myth.
Largely
the rest of the crowd agreed. I think some of them were calling an Uber. I mean, it was
right. When they're all together on it, it's a little deflating.
Yeah.
Well, we want to delve into some of your career as an actor and doing what you've done, but obviously you're here to promote a film, Fighting With My Family.
Yeah.
And nice having Dwayne Johnson on board.
It's always nice having Dwayne involved in any capacity of your life. Yes.
Yeah. Did you work with him on Tooth Fairy?
Yes, I did a film called Tooth Fairy. You're welcome.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. How old were you at the time?
I have kids.
I just had my voice.
I have kids, and so I'm required to watch some of their programming from time
to time. It's amazing how if you have kids, there's a whole other avenue of movies and TV, right, that you're exposed to that,
There was some sort of witch magic show that just season 2 came out on Friday on Prime, and I had for 4 hours just sat there
and you don't
that.
Even remember what it was called. It's just some weird magic witch show.
Yep.
So this project is based on a there was a documentary, I think it aired
so
in 2012.
Dwayne, right? As I call him,
you're allowed to.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He was in England. He was filming Fast and Furious 6.
Right.
And he was in a hotel room. He couldn't sleep one night. And he saw on British TV this documentary about this real-life family of British wrestlers. Mum, Dad, all the kids wrestle.
Yeah.
And they play to kind of tiny little provincial half-filled theatres in England. And Dwayne, coming from a wrestling family, kind of responded to them and actually ended up becoming loosely involved in their lives. And basically, the family dream was to get their two teenage kids into WWE, as you can imagine, the big leagues of wrestling. But only the daughter got signed. She became later known as Paige. She went off to WWE, and at the age of 18, 4,000 miles from home, I had to train. Brother got left behind. It sounds like it's a dark and heavy story. It's actually a very fun, ultimately, I think, very uplifting, and it's appropriate that I'm in Philadelphia. Quite a sort of rocky underdog story at the core of it.
Well, it's funny because we have the wrestlers come through here quite often, and every one of them, to a person, to man, woman, well, it doesn't matter, their abilities as showmen, they're just exemplary. They're really good. They come with stories. They're charismatic. And also to see what kind of family creates somebody, because I'm familiar with Paige and the whole thing, is kind of interesting. But all the reviews and everyone says it has that heartwarming edge to it. And it's a bizarre thing that a family business is this wrestling.
Well, it was when Dwayne sent it to me, DJ, when he sent it to me,
I'm DJ now.
Rocky.
Interview, you became more familiar with him. Yeah.
Let's be honest. He actually makes me call him Mr. Johnson. But for the purposes of this interview, DJ sent it to me, and I thought, oh, wrestling, because I didn't know anything about wrestling. I wasn't interested, and I sort of sat there. I thought, well, I better watch it because it's The Rock, you know, and you do what he says. And I was really charmed by this family. I love their passion for this crazy thing called wrestling. That they talk about it, how it sort of it saved them from darker times. The dad, Ricky, had been in and out of jail when he was young, and I was in and out of jail. And his wife Julia says mainly violence. So they had tough times in the past, and wrestling, kind of like the way that alcoholics will talk about Jesus, kind of really saved their lives.
They're saving issues.
But so in the end, I realized this is not really a story about wrestling in the way that I'd argue Rocky's not really about boxing, right?
No.
It's about this kid and these dreams he has.
It's a love story.
It is a love story, absolutely. Yeah. And so I didn't approach this as a wrestling movie. It's a story about a family and their dreams and this girl having to live this family dream both for herself and for her family.
And to see her brother fail at what he wanted equally as much.
Right. Because there's many, many sports movies, as it were, about exceptional people, but actually many people just get left behind.
Yeah,
right?
What
do you do then? How do you pick yourself up when you've been told no?
No, it's a classic sort of dynamic.
Right.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot of press, Stephen, about this movie, and I saw that you sat down with DJ and were interviewed by Kevin Smith, and I'm wondering what the interview process is like when Kevin Smith is doing the interviewing, because he's very verbose, and when you ask him a question, he can talk for a half hour. Is the interview like that with Kevin as well, or does he allow you guys to talk?
I really liked Kevin. I'd never been interviewed by him before, but he was great. But yes, when you're with DJ, you know he's got the fastest, he's got the tightest schedule I've ever known, the tightest abs and the tightest schedule of anyone I've ever met.
Go hand in hand,
and you've got that 7 minute window with him. And Kevin's first question was about 6 minutes.
we've had him on the show.
He didn't have much time for any answers.
Kevin's KS, as we call him, is a friend of the show.
I call him Smitty. Really, call him KS.
We know him well,
but he is such a fan of this stuff and such a genre fan, and he interviewed you at Sundance as well.
That's
which is where the film premiered. I wanted to ask you, because
his best question was, if you were making a biopic, because it's obviously a real life story, if you were making a real story and you were acting in it, you were starring in it, who would you make the life story of? And I'd never been asked that question before, and I realized that the person I would want to make a movie about is this guy called David Prowse. David Prowse was inside Darth Vader, right? But of course, famously, James Earl Jones did the voice. David Prowse is from my neck of the woods in England. He's got the same accent as me. Now, when you hear me speaking, you think, my God, that guy sounds so sophisticated. He sounds like Hugh Grant. If you were English, you'd know I sound very provincial and kind of yokely.
Right.
And so David Prowse has the same voice. And so, the legend goes, he didn't know they had revoiced him with James Earl Jones until the premiere.
That's true.
And he sits there and he's watching it. And of course, he's been on set doing all the, all right, Luke, I'm your father, me old babber. Come and have a drink, mate. And gets there, and then James Earl Jones is doing that amazing voice, and apparently, obviously, devastated. So,
well, he's actually, if you want to see him, what he really looks like, if you watch In Clockwork Orange, there's a house where they attack in the beginning, the Droogs, and then they go back later, and he has this bodybuilder living with him, and that bodybuilder is David Prowse.
Yeah, I admit, I was hoping none of you knew what he looked like.
I'm not the perfect physical fit.
He looks a lot like DJ.
Basically, I'll do the voice and DJ will do the body.
Well, you could always bulk up. You know, one of those incredible transformations. So when you were shooting the actual wrestling sequences, rumor has it you did it at the Staples Center after a Raw event. Is that correct?
Yes, we had 1 hour. Very gracious of the WWE, given they're involved with the movie, to give us 1 hour after a Monday Night Raw telecast.
Requires a lot of planning, I'm sure, when you're trying to knock off scene after scene after scene.
Right, well, we wanted to recreate this giant match, and obviously we couldn't afford 20,000 extras, and so they kept these 20,000 fans back. We invited them to stay. We didn't just lock the doors and start rolling the cameras.
That's a fire hazard.
But Dwayne came down and sort of emceed the event, and we only had that 1 hour, and I said to him, I mean, if you've never seen Dwayne in front of a wrestling crowd, it's insane. I mean, people go crazy. It's like Elvis has come back. So I said, please, just keep it tight. Go out. Explain what we're doing. Get off. He goes out there, just 20 minutes on the mic. He's ad-libbing, he's making jokes, and I'm like, the clock's ticking, we haven't got much time to film. I'm the only person who's ever been screaming to Dwayne Johnson to get out of a wrestling room.
But is there something to we've all been to the events, and wrestling was not my thing initially. When you realize what they're going for and the self-knowing tone and the whole thing and the audience adulation, and you go to an actual event, there's nothing like
it. It's really, really fun. It is unique. Like I say, I had never been. Dwayne took me to WrestleMania. No big deal. And he came out and he came out with a flamethrower and set foot to a 10-foot sign of his name, and he milked that for 10 minutes before he said a word.
Wow,
and
that's
the crowd were screaming the whole time. It is extraordinary. But then the athleticism, the showmanship, it's really, really fun. But I would emphasize the movie, if you don't like wrestling, as I did not when I started this project, you will enjoy it anyway. It's really not just for the wrestling
fan.
Stephen Merchant is with us, and I want to talk about your acting roles real quick. And one that I was not aware that it was you until afterwards, but with now the Academy Awards coming up and Black Panther is starting to win awards and is up for Best Picture, you were in a movie that we had said could have
and should have
had that barrier been broken down of allowing these action and especially superhero
you
movies.
You mean Tooth Fairy?
To maybe be Tooth Fairy.
Exactly.
No, to be taken a little more seriously was Logan, obviously. Right. And you played Caliban in that. Which was this horrible, I mean, not horrible, but he was a broken, sad character, there was so much drama in that. Tell us a little bit about that film and that character and playing
that. He was a giant albino mutant. It was typecasting.
But very muscular.
Yes, very thin, kind of very pale. So there's a picture of him right there.
Yeah.
If you don't remember, I kind of almost look like that famous the way that death is portrayed in the Seventh Seal, right?
Max von Sydow.
That's the kind of bald head.
And Ted's excellent adventure.
Well, same one.
It's a rip-off.
In fact, when I had that makeup on, obviously Marvel won't let you leave the set, but I wanted to just like go down to a funeral home and just say, I'm here for my 4 o'clock.
Show me what you
have. Or just go to an old people's home and just stand in the garden just pointing.
Oh my God.
Just mouthing, "You're next."
That would have been awesome.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Now, was that part yours, or did you have to audition for
it? No, I auditioned, and James Mangold, the director, was incredible, and kind of, I've never had an audition like it, because he's so intense, and he said, stand up, sit down, hold this, take your glasses off. I can't see anything, I'm flapping around. It was a really kind of really interactive audition, but I mean, let's be honest, I don't think there's any other pale-faced 6'7" guys working in Hollywood. I think it was a shoo-in that I get the role.
Well,
really.
They can do a lot with effects these days.
Yeah, but so I think they didn't have the budget for CGI, so they came to me.
But your inherent, I think your heart, you felt sympathy for this character, and Logan was just such a departure and such a cool way to go. You know, for that to be that the
and it was a hard R, too.
They went after.
Well, I thought it was going to be too bleak for people. I was surprised at the response and how much people responded to it, because I really thought, this is very extreme and almost depressing, because we were in that mode of the Marvel movies being a lot more lighthearted and kind of fun and jokey, and suddenly along comes this thing with, you know, lots of death and
well, it was it was a home run. We have to ask a bit about because we're all huge fans of The Office.
Yeah,
and obviously you met Ricky Gervais during when you were on radio.
Like okay. I say, my radio, my first love, and I joined a radio station in England that was just setting up, and right. he was working there behind the scenes. He wasn't even on the air, which was
is that
slight
wild?
Misuse of him.
Oh my God!
But he was actually an office. I mean,
he was my boss, and I sent my resume in, and I think. He's a very lazy man, and I think it was on the top of the pile. Right. And he thought this guy'd be fine.
Right.
And he called me up, and we hit it off almost immediately.
That's
and,
great.
Unfortunately, the radio station launched the day after Princess Diana died. So, as you can imagine, no one was really in the mood for a sort of alternative rock station with an irreverent sense of humor. So it took a while to kind of gather momentum after that.
Yeah.
But eventually we went on the air, and that was when things started to click for us. And off we went, really.
And so your relationship with him, and obviously the things you've done together are great. And Idiot Abroad is one of our favorites. Whose concept was that?
Well, that was one of those situations again, and I don't want to speak to anyone in this room, but we did radio, and we got given a producer, and he wasn't supposed to speak, and we just asked him a question one day on the air, and his answer was insane.
Yeah.
And we thought, wait a minute, there's an untapped goldmine here. And Carl was that guy, and we would start asking him questions, and I remember the first sort of sign was he was telling a story about growing up. And he was talking away. Da, 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 da. Anyway, in the house next door, the people who live next door, they're the ones who had a horse that they kept in the living room. Anyway, and he moved on. And we're like, wait, what?
Right.
There was a horse that lived in the living room?
Yeah.
And the stuff which we thought was interesting was not the stuff he thought was fascinating.
And so, somebody not interested at all in traveling.
Not interested not in traveling. And then eventually we started sending him to these other countries.
So he's really like that.
He's 100% like that.
It's a fascinating show. I mean, it's a fish out of water kind of a show, and you send him around the world, but his responses to those situations are great.
Well, that's it. And he just has a very natural, instinctive reaction. Like, he goes to the Great Wall of China, and he's like, it's not a great wall. It's a fine wall. I wouldn't say it's a great wall. You know, and they're just such instinctive, natural responses.
Yeah. And it's not, you can tell you can tell when things are just padded and but that it seems to be an innate response of his to these various scenarios.
He just doesn't think what he's saying. So you'll just be talking to him. I remember one of the early times we were on the air and he said, what are those things in that movie Gremlins called? Gremlins, Carl. The clue's in the title.
That's great.
We had that with a guy who was like, you remember that game where you would operate on the guy? And
Operation.
He's doing an operation.
Yes.
But he's sweet. You root for Carl in an idiot. And you end up caring about this idiot.
There's no malice.
Exactly.
So he'll say these things, and they're not intended to be malicious. Or
sure.
Just ignorant, really, you know?
Stephen, we had said when teasing the fact that you were going to be here that there's one bit that we had to bring up to you that we reference many times over the years, and I'll just say one phrase to you, and it should bring it right to your mind, which is, I've got full-blown AIDS.
Sure.
Liam Neeson teaching him improvisational comedy
Genius.
Is just golden. Just absolutely golden. Yeah. You guys had to have been stifling laughter the whole time.
Oh, it's
when you were
impossible
going through that.
To get through that.
And to know that you hit pay dirt, because you could ask someone to do that. Neeson had to have a bit of the skill to do it.
Of course.
And to know
course.
How to stay in his lane, because that could fail miserably, but it's a home run.
I met him on a talk show, and he said, I like what you guys do. And whenever someone said that, we would leap on them immediately. I don't mean physically, but you know, we would contact them immediately and say, well, you said you like the show, so can you do something with us? And, you know, and we had this idea of sort of someone very serious-minded who wants to try and get into comedy. And the idea of Neeson being that person, I mean, a man that you know, aside from many things from Schindler's List, kind of wanting to get into comedy. And there's nothing about Liam Neeson's on-screen character that suggests he's a funny man, although he's a very warm, humorous man in real life. But so, I mean, it was unbelievable.
It's just great. I have to ask if this is fake movie lore, but were you part of the Beauty and the Beast film? Was there a cameo that you were involved in that was excised from the film?
That's right. They made a live action Beauty and the Beast,
which I loved, by the way. I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful film.
And the joke was that at the end, everyone comes, they get turned back from the things they've been turned into, right? So there's a teapot and all the rest of it, and they get turned back into their real lives. And the joke was that I was just soaking wet, and I'd been turned into the toilet. And it just cuts to me, and I'm just there. And I think I was improvising. I was just going, the horror. The horror.
That would have been great.
Which I thought would be, I guess Disney felt that it wasn't
that you were the toilet.
Yeah.
It was, would have been great. Because you do think in Beauty and the Beast, it's all things that are the pleasant, like a,
right.
you know, wonderful little...
Like the grandfather cloth or whatever.
The wardrobe or whatever, and that's all great, but not the toilet. Not, like a bidet would have been... Yeah, right. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so they cut me out.
So so with this, how much of the promotion, and I know you're out pushing the film, how much traveling, you know, how long does this run for you?
Well, I came from Sundance, then to Houston, and then I've been to Chicago. We actually landed the day of the polar vortex.
Oh, wow.
Man, that's really intense.
We know that it can get cold over in England, and that's even for here is a level of...
Oh, it was... I have never known cold like it.
Yeah.
It was, and it goes... I think it says a lot about how passionate I am about this movie, that I was willing to go to that to sort of celebrate this film. Also, I'm contractually obliged. But it was intense.
That's awesome. Wow.
Had you ever worked with Nick Frost before?
I hadn't. I love Nick Frost, though. He's so funny.
We've had him in the studio a couple of times. He is. He's hilarious. He's really talented. And for people who don't know, who does he play in this movie?
So he plays the father, Ricky. Nick is... Because the real guy is funny, but he's also got a great warmth to him. You were talking about Carl, and I think Nick has that as well innately. But at the times, he's tough. You know, like I say, he's a guy in real life who did prison time early on in his life. And Nick not only kind of has a physical resemblance, but also loves wrestling. So he was one of the few people, aside from Dwayne, on the production who actually already had a pre-existing passion for it. And he was excited because he got to jump around in the ring.
Yeah, he's actually physically pretty adroit.
He's great. Yeah.
There's a couple of movies where he's done the last in the trilogy with...
Shaun of the Dead.
The last film.
Yeah.
World's End. Yeah.
Right, yeah, well, yes. So there's a ton of fighting
and
in
that. He's great at doing that kind of the pratfalls and the physical stuff, yeah.
Did he have to geek out a little bit with Dwayne about wrestling?
You met at Sundance.
They were in scenes together.
Uh-huh. Are you a wrestling fan? Where did you?
I am now. I never understood it when I was.
You
growing
weren't
up.
Into the British Bulldogs.
Well, you see, now when I was growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, my grandfather used to watch British wrestling, and British wrestling was huge in the 70s. But let me tell you, if you've never seen, there was a guy called Big Daddy, there was a guy called Giant Haystacks. These were just really tall, fat men.
Okay,
that was all they did. They had no athleticism. They would just bump bellies, and people would go crazy. I remember being a fan of Big Daddy. I'd never even seen him wrestle. He was an icon.
Yeah.
But I used to watch, my granddad would watch it and I'd walk in and I'd be like, what is going on? I didn't understand what it was. So I never got into the groove of it. There he is.
In fact, in the earlier days of wrestling here, when it was big in the 50s on television, that you would have guys like this. But the truth of the matter is that it morphed. You had these incredibly, imposing, muscular guys. But at that time, you had people who had like written for the Conan O'Brien show were being paid to write these. And I remember checking it out occasionally and going, well, that's a little sharper than I thought this was.
Like you said, there's a humor to it, and there's a knowingness to it.
Right.
And there's a real showmanship. I mean, it's someone described it as being like soap opera in spandex.
That's really what it
really
is.
Which really made sense to me then. And I think once you tune into that, and it has a great sense of humor, so people forget.
Oh, you have Lena
Headey
in the film, yes. Mm-hmm. She's the mom. Are you a Game of Thrones fan?
Look, as far as she's concerned, yes. I haven't seen Game of Thrones. I don't. I know people love it, but I'm not into dragons. What can I tell you?
Okay. It's not your thing.
So I know it's more than dragons. Yeah. I know it's more than that.
It is. And the whole first season doesn't even really touch on that. It's really
sick. It's mostly wrestling.
It's mainly wrestling.
Well, the mountain's in it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. We had him in here from that series. I don't know if you're familiar with this guy.
She's phenomenal.
Yeah. She's great. Yeah. Well, everyone, I mean, because the stuff I have seen is obviously. She's this kind of quite ice queeny character, right?
And this is completely antithetical to that, right?
In fact, she very sweetly auditioned for me because she was very passionate about being involved with the project. But I did not know if she was the right fit from what people had told me, what I'd seen of Game of Thrones. But she just killed it. She crushed it.
Wow, yeah. Excellent.
Well, the reaction's been great, and the reviews are awesome. And they do. You know that your much known sharp sensibility, your comedic ability, but it's touching, and that's what they're.
It is. It's a very uplifting, I think, inspiring.
Yeah.
As I say, Rocky style underdog story.
There you go.
Fighting with my family is hitting theaters, and thanks for coming by because we're fans of you.
Likewise,
and,
I really enjoy myself, guys.
Really happy to have you in here, Stephen Merchant.
Yes.
Love MMR. Buy some gear. Check out the Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Snazzy.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We're excited to have our next guest in the studios. You've seen him in TV shows and films, and now you get to see him live on stage here in Philadelphia.
Very cool.
Anything from Silicon Valley to Patriots Day to Crazy Rich Asians to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And the list goes on, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jimmy O'Yang. Yeah. How you doing, Jimmy?
Morning. I'm doing well. It's excellent. Great.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, I mentioned all those credits, and, you know, you do comedy, but I want to point out, man, you're a solid dramatic actor as well. Patriots Day, you were fantastic in.
Thank you so much. Sadly, not a lot of people watched it, but I'm
glad. Love that movie.
So it's made the jump over to like HBO and stuff like that, and people are seeing it. Yeah. But it is a movie that is very well done. And Mark Wahlberg and everybody is really good. And who's the director? Was Peter?
Peter Berg.
Peter Berg, who's amazing. Really, really good. And he and Wahlberg work well together.
And yeah. You played a role of a story that I really didn't know. And I'm watching, you know, they were taking different people. This, if you haven't seen the movie, it's about the Boston Marathon bombing. And it took a bunch of different peoples and their experiences, mainly focused on
the pursuit of the brothers.
Exactly. Yeah. But your character was the one who was kidnapped, held hostage by those guys, and eventually escaped and alerted the police. Hey, I know where these guys are. I know who they are. I didn't know that story.
Yeah, that guy was amazing.
Yeah.
Danny Meng, Chinese immigrant, you know, college student. And this is about, of course, the Boston Marathon bombing.
Yeah.
And I bugged him every other day. Spoiler alert, he stays alive, you know, in the movie.
Yeah.
So I bugged him every day when I was in Boston. And we had dinner, like went to Chinatown every other day. He was a really nice, warm guy. And he came to the premiere and tapped me on the shoulder. He's like, hey. I think you did a great job.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, it's weird. It's to me, it always seems to be one of the weirdest things. And some actors have, you know, the desire to go speak with the person that they're playing, and other people don't want to. And, that, you know, I guess it's whatever the technique that works for that particular actor. I think if you have someone that you could glean some insight from, that would benefit the performance, you know?
Yeah, and he was super nice. It's not like he was asking for money or anything. You know, I mean, like, that would be weird.
Sure, for $1,000.
Yeah, for $1,000, I'll tell you what happened.
But obviously a lot of great comedic roles, fresh off the boat, and I'd mentioned the movies and all that stuff. So is stand-up comedy where you kind of started, or acting, or where'd you begin?
That's where everything started. Okay. I started doing stand-up at the Ha Ha Comedy Club.
Ha Ha, yeah.
In L.A., I had to pay $5 for 5 minutes of stage time.
That's what it used. So it's quite common a lot of times when you do stand-up. In the early days, you either have to do one or two things. You'll pay, or you have to promise, I'll bring in 10 people to watch.
Exactly. It's called a bringer show.
Right.
And I did that, too. And honestly, I've had times where I only brought in 3 people instead of like 5, and they wouldn't let me on stage. I'm like, just let me on stage for 3 minutes. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. But you studied economics, right?
Yes, studied economics.
University of San Diego?
UCSD.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, was your commencement speaker Mike Judge?
Yeah. How crazy was that?
The showrunner for Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley. Yeah. Look, I didn't even think I was going to be an actor then. You know, I was barely starting to do open mics. And Mike is probably the only cool person that ever went to UCSD. Because everybody else is like an engineer or like neuroscientist or something like that.
Right.
And Mike was a physicist.
He's Mensa level smart, that dude.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
He's a genius. He ended up working to program fighter jets.
No.
And that's how he started working in the Silicon Valley in the 80s during like one of the original tech booms.
The creator of Beavis and Butthead has that kind of mental skill set. It's amazing.
Yeah, and he's toured as a professional bassist for like bluegrass bands. The guy's a genius.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So little did you suspect. But so after that, after the economics and everything, you were born in Hong Kong, correct?
I was born in Hong Kong. Yeah.
Came here. I know you have a book called How to American an Immigrant's Guide to Disappointing Your Parents.
Yes, that's true.
And so you come here and you had relatives in the States, and you came here to live. And so, but
so you, and I think you're working, you know, you're working at a financial firm, or where was it?
Right? Yeah, it was Smith Barney, was under Citigroup. And okay. I graduated 2010 from college, which is right after the financial crash of 2008.
It's a perfect time.
Nobody in finance was hiring, and nobody was going to trust a 22-year-old kid with their money.
Right.
You know? So my dad hooked me up with an internship. And, like, one day he came, like, Jimmy, you know, great news. They're going to hire you full time. You're going to be a great financial advisor. And literally, like, tears of joy was coming out of his eyes. And I thought that was just the worst news ever. Like, that to me sounded like a death sentence, you know. And I just didn't know how to tell him. And I was like, I don't want to do this, you know. And
but out of your sense of obligation, you figured you at least had to give it a try.
Exactly. It was, I always thought it was, because the subtitle of the book, you know, Immigrants Got It, Disappointing Your Parents. For me, disappointing your Asian parents is the same as, you know, pursuing your dreams. It's those two are the same thing.
They're the exact same thing.
Yeah. Do you have older siblings or anything like that?
I did. My brother, and he is in finance.
So,
you know,
so that's going to be even more of a disappointment as well. I ran into something similar. My older brother is a chemist. My older sister was a math teacher. And then I started doing radio, and my dad was like, when are you going to, like, start your life? And I was like, but I am.
Like, get a real job.
Yeah.
And we know it. It's the truth. I mean, there was that Tiger Mom, you know, she wrote that book. And, you know, and we just get this sense. I mean, obviously, the list of academic accomplishments within the Asian community is legendary. So,
yeah.
So, yes, I would imagine the onus is on you to do that. So how did you just start doing it and hope you get enough success to warrant it? Or did you just say, I'm going to go for this?
I had to, like, disappoint my parents in order to not disappoint myself.
Yeah.
Like, that was the creed that I live by. So after college, I did the internship for a little bit just to appease my dad. And then after that, I got three jobs when I graduated. I was a used car salesman. I worked at a comedy club as a doorman in exchange for stage time. And then I was a strip club DJ at night. So I did all those three things, still not knowing what I wanted to do.
Okay,
all right, just
we have multiple questions there, Casey.
Well, so strip club DJ, but so you paid basically for your stage time at a comedy club. Did you have to? Because I thought this is the way it worked at strip clubs, at least some here in Philly. Do you pay for your booth and then you work off of tips from the dancers? Or they just straight up paid you?
No. They paid me. I think it was like $75 a shift. And if the dancers wanted to tip me, you know, they could tip me, but there was no customers in that club, so nobody ever tipped me.
What was it? Were you doing, like, day stripping, or was it a night stripper?
It was night stripping. It was
prime time.
It was after my comedy club show. There was no prime time in that club at any time.
Ever.
It was called Fantasy Showgirls. It's shut down now.
Okay.
And they had, like, two customers at most, and my job became... like, really doing crowd work on those two guys and really hassling the two people. It was sad.
So, did you have, and almost every strip club DJ has the same delivery. Yeah, all right, fellas out there, let's put your hands together.
Yeah.
Were you doing
it? It was the same thing, yeah. It was, you go into, like, a strip club DJ voice.
Yeah.
I never learned it, but I guess I heard it somewhere. It's like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, 2-for-1 lap days is coming up right now. Guy with the gray shirt in the front, don't be shy with you, Wally. Get 2-for-1 lap dancer with your favorite dancers. I saw you eyeing Milan and Jade. You can get 2-for-1 for the price of one for the next 10 minutes. It's just that voice.
Yeah. Mercedes on the main stage. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, there's only one stage. Okay.
this place really was bad.
It was sad, man.
Jimmy, I wanted to ask about your character, Bernard Tai.
Oh, yeah.
In Crazy Rich Asians. That douchebag friend that for some reason the guys all just keep in their circle for whatever reason it is.
Yeah.
Number one, did you have any friend in mind when you were being that character? It had to have been a fun character to play, first of all.
Absolutely. Super fun, super douchey, and I took a hard, deep look into myself. And I'm like, this might be me.
You know, the press is a douchebag, though. Yeah, you know?
I think he's in a part of all of us. There's a part of us that want to be this billionaire playboy that lives by no rules and is a complete douche. So you just kind of let that part out yourself, you know, and it was really fun.
That character made the movie for me.
It was great. And there was also, you have these people, you have the stud, the main
protagonist there, who's very demure about the spending.
Yeah.
And here you are going, no, let's go for it.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at how popular the movie was and how it took off?
We weren't expecting it. We're hoping it'll be big, you know, because it's very important for our community in a way, just so that we can make more movies with our faces on it, you know?
Yeah.
The Asian community, for anybody that doesn't know. but yeah, it was, I was amazed when we did the press tours and stuff. And well, actually, one of my stops was here in Philly.
Okay.
We stopped by Mac Mart and gave out a bunch of like lobster mac and cheese. We went to Barclay Prime. I wouldn't pay for this myself, but we had a $120 cheesesteak, the Crazy Rich cheesesteak.
Yep.
It was amazing. Yeah. It was great. That was what I remember from
Somebody
Philly.
Told me that you guys were in this building.
I think so. I honestly forget which show it was, like, because it was, but we were here. I remember.
Yeah. I'm going to complain about that. Yeah. Because you didn't come by. Yeah.
All right. So in the film, your character shoots a missile launcher.
Yeah.
Several times. What were those? Just fireworks inside that, or is it all CGI? Or did they have you shooting?
It was a real missile launcher, but it was CGI fireworks.
Okay.
Because I don't think it'll be safe for me to.
Yeah.
You know. Shoot it, but you know, it's just a testament to my acting. You know, you got to do the boom. You know, as if you fell back a couple steps.
Yeah,
I'm kidding.
Well,
but yeah. It was a very heavy. It's like 30 pounds, and it was like 120 degrees in. This was in Malaysia.
Okay,
and great job to our set decorator. You know. So
it's magnificent.
The scene was on a cargo ship, and it was like functional, like pools, helicopter pads, you know, diving boards, stuff like that. And it was in an empty parking lot in Malaysia that he built all these things.
That's where that was?
Yeah.
Man, that looked good.
Right.
Because it's the same reason that the lifestyles of the rich and famous was so popular. Everyone loves to look at that sort of lush lifestyle.
Yeah.
But the cast was great, too. You had Michelle Yeoh, who's legendary.
Legend.
You know, we had Steve Byrne in, and he's a good friend of the show. And he was talking about, he goes, you know, there's this whole... I'm a big fan of Hong Kong, you know, cinema and all that stuff. So these all these people, to see them get this sort of celebration for this. First, you have a super stellar looking cast. What's her name? Gemma Chan.
Gemma Chan, amazing. Yeah,
and then obviously, so. But I mean, they had to be putting you up in style. They can't drive you to a set that's that glorious and then have you go back to the Ramada, right? Were they taking care of you?
Yeah. Yes and no. Like, I mean, we stayed in a very nice hotel in Singapore. But at the same time, we didn't have the biggest budget. It was a $35 million film, right? And in the book, it said the budget for that wedding was $35
million. Yeah.
So we have to somehow make everything look great. And it would be like handmade, you know, Singaporean suits that we're wearing. And they're some of the greatest tailors there. But inside, we're wearing like a Uniqlo shirt.
Okay.
You know, but we made it work. You know what I mean?
You convinced us. Yeah.
It looked like excess. It looked legit. Everything looked really top notch. So that's cool that they were able to pull that off like that.
Yeah. And whenever you put Gemma Chan on stage, it just looks like $100 million.
She's stunning. You know? Yeah. I mean, she's just incredible.
You had mentioned, you know, the Asian community and acting and comedy. And I know that you use your social media to promote that and so on. So how tight is the amongst actors and comedians? Is there a community? Do you get together? Do you see each other around as far as the Asian performance community goes?
Yeah, I think it's both. Like, I started off with just a stand-up community, which I thought was so cool. That's one of the main reasons why I did stand-up.
So you've seen Bobby Lee's penis then?
Sadly, no.
Oh!
I've been left out.
Well, like
that guy gets naked every time he comes in this studio.
Oh, really? I've been to his house, and he still has not shown me his penis.
Like, we're not even Asian.
We're closer friends. Yeah.
I know. Must be something wrong with me. Maybe he only shows penis to white people.
It might be that.
That might be it.
And he tells you guys about, listen, here's what I do with the white. You whip it out.
But yeah, like Bobby was somebody I looked up to. I watched Matt TV religiously. Steve Byrne was somebody I looked up to. Ken Jeong. And now we're all like really close and good friends.
That's great.
Ken, of course, was in the movie.
Yeah.
He's great.
And, you know, we all love each other. And doing this movie, one of the greatest thing, you know, was I felt like I found my creed. Yeah. You know, of actors, comedians, because we all kind of went through the same phase of disappointing our parents to do this job. We all had the same experience. And like when we hang out in Singapore, there was no questions of like, hey, can we go to Chinese food? Like, look, it's not like weird Chinese food. It's just like, no, no. Everybody was just down. We're going to authentic Chinese food, and we did karaoke every night. Everybody was just on the same page, and it felt so good. You
That's
know?
Cool. If you're just tuning in, it's Jimmy O. Yang and Steve. I have a special surprise for you. Now, this is from a text message, so I hope this is correct. But did you star with Ken Jeong in a BTS music video?
I did. Yeah.
Holy
is a
crap.
Massive BTS fan.
I have become a fan of this. I saw them. This is recent because I saw my Margaret Cho was here and she started laughing, but she was, you know, she got it. They did that the song that they do with Halsey, and but they, it was without her. I'm not. I know my Halsey. So they did, and I'm like, and I told these guys, I watched it. I was like,
Saturday Night Live.
I was being dismissive on Saturday Night Live, and like, and then I suddenly like, oh, this is really good. I was enjoying the performance, and now I really do kind of dig them, and now I'm sort of into the K-pop scene a little bit.
It's amazing.
It is amazing because, again, there's such an over-the-top nature to what's being done, but it's done with such zeal and joy. You'd have to be a rock to not be... at least get into it a little bit. Are you a fan at all?
I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's the new Backstreet Boys, but they just happen in Korean.
Yeah, you I know, think they're better.
And that's huge for the community, once again. Like, I mean, whenever I meet a girl that tells me she listens to BTS, it's a done deal. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's it. It's great. They're representing, man. Like, it's great. And they're, like, sexy. They're, like, sex symbols worldwide. So it's great for
so
us.
So there's wow. I just found, I was showing a video to somebody. It's 10 girls. I don't know the name of this band, but somebody just said, of course, now I get inundated, and somehow I end up on BTS message boards.
Yeah, nice.
This is the point of my life. But there's a lot out there, you know, and it's cool to discover this. I wanted to ask you something that I saw, and I don't know if this is real. Did you do work with the Harlem Globetrotters?
Oh, man. You know, people ask me that. It was one of my very first paid jobs ever. So the Harlem Globetrotters, they go to China for like a world tour every year.
Right.
And I was like the one of the only Chinese-American comedians they could find. This was like 10 years ago. And and I was the only one they could afford, I guess. They paid me $200.
To do what exactly?
To be a consultant. So they sent me the script for the Chinese tour to make sure nothing's offensive.
Oh. Okay.
Honestly, I didn't even read the script.
You're good to go.
I didn't know. I was like, that was my first job as a comic. I didn't know. And I skimmed through the script. There's something about, like, they bring out, like, a Hello Kitty thing, you know, in the middle of their show. I just told them for $200. I was like, dude, you know, Hello Kitty's Japanese, not Chinese. Okay, just so you guys know that. And that was it. That was my $200 worth of advice. And now on my Wikipedia says that I wrote for the Harlem Globetrotters.
So I was like, what the hell could he possibly be writing for the Harlem Globetrotters?
Right?
You know, so they're going to win.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Wow. Hey, I wanted to ask you about a term that I wasn't familiar with that I did learn in Crazy Rich Asians was they talk about being called a banana.
Oh, yeah.
Yellow on the outside, white on the inside. Is that an insult amongst the Asian community?
Yeah, well,
an Asian to Asian insult of sorts?
Kind of, like a nice nudge. Like okay. You know, why are you acting so white type of deal?
Okay. Is that like an Asian version of like an Uncle Tom?
Yeah.
Or like
an
Oreo.
Well, that's a bit harsher. Or we have a term for that called Uncle Chan. If you look on the hater Asian Twitterverse. You know,
the
ton of that.
Asian Twitter. Right?
Yeah. But a banana, a Twinkie, you know?
Okay.
Something
okay.
like that. Yeah.
I've always wanted to go to Hong Kong, and it just looks, you know, like a fascinating. How old were you when you left?
I was 13.
Okay, she
very
has some time
awkward age to come to a different country.
Yeah.
You know?
Real quick, then, what is your Asian name, then?
Yeah. So, my in Cantonese is instead of Jimmy, my Asian first name is Man Sing, or in Mandarin it's Wan Chen. It stands for 10,000 success.
10,000 okay. success.
Yeah. So my parents were definitely trying to set me up for failure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You're like five success.
Yeah, and then the last name means in the world of comedy.
Yeah.
Please tell me that they're proud of you right now.
They are. Okay. It took them a long time to come around. I take them to all the premieres. I took them to the Patriots Day premiere, and all my dad wanted was a selfie with Mark Wahlberg. It was very embarrassing.
Did he get it?
He got it. Same thing with Crazy Rich Asians. They wanted a selfie with Constance and Michelle, and they got that. So they were like real happy about that. But still, they didn't like care that I was there almost. But it wasn't until I made it on a Chinese newspaper.
Really?
Then they were like, oh, okay, he made it.
Okay.
So like Silicon Valley, not on their radar? They
yes and no. My dad understands comedy a little better than my mom. Like, he loved it. My mom watched it for the first time. He's like, hey, Jimmy, can you not hunch it back?
He's correcting your posture?
Yeah, I was like, Ma, I'm playing a character in the show. It's like, okay, play someone who doesn't hunch his back.
Sure. Speaking of Silicon Valley, I read the other day, sixth season is going to be the last one.
Yeah, it is. We just announced it.
Filming it, or have you started? Or?
We just had our first table read. So we're going to go in the end of this month. We're going to start.
The table read process is kind of interesting. I've seen footage of it. So when you're sitting down there, is that the first time you're reading the script?
Well, it's not supposed to be. You know, they send you the script the night before. Right. If you're really good about it, you read it before.
Are you
sometimes
good about
I read it, sometimes I'm not. And then I get caught because, like, I'm way too enthralled in the script, like, as if I'm watching as an audience member. So I get caught not reading it because I'm like, ooh, no way. You know? And then Amanda Crew would turn to me and be like, you didn't read the script. I think there was a famous video out there now with Kit Harington's reaction of the last season.
He starts crying, when he finds out what happens to his lover.
Ygritte. Wow, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, to this last season. Oh, no spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. You have a birthday coming up.
Yeah, this
Tuesday.
Coming week, yeah.
You're the day before me, you're the 11th.
Oh, really? You're the 12th?
Yeah.
Gemini.
Yeah. You going to do anything special, or birthday's just kind of...
I don't know. I'm 31 now. I feel like once you pass 30, it's nothing
special. Yeah, I'm 31 too.
Yeah. I don't know. I just like a nice dinner and go to a local bar, you know?
Okay.
Something chill.
Cool. Any woman in your life these days, or anyone in your life? Romantically?
Know, maybe not.
Yeah. Okay.
Depends on the weekend.
Yeah, it depends on what city I'm in. Like, no, come
depends
on.
Depends if he meets some BTS fans.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Did you and Gemma Chan hit it off?
We did the press tour together.
Yeah,
She's great. She's amazing. But she's in Britain. Well, she's in Britain.
Speaking quickly of that, there's talk of a second one, yes?
I think they're writing it because it's based on three books.
Yeah.
So we don't know. We don't know what it's going to be about. Hopefully I'll be a part of it.
Yeah, and, it'd be nuts to not have you in it.
I know, right? Yeah. We're such close families.
Your character stood out so much that they could, if the success continues, they could spin it off and have your own movie.
That would be fun. I would love that. I love playing that guy. It's so freeing.
Just give you weapons to shoot.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
It's like when really good people get to play villains and they're so good at it.
Yeah.
Because it's just not, you know, it's
that'd
like,
be fun.
Oh, I can be bad and mean. And
they relish it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Anything in the works right now that we should keep an eye out for as far as this?
Yeah, did a couple things. So funny, you said Steve Byrne. Yeah. He just directed a movie that I'm in.
He was telling us about it. It has to do with the opening act.
It's called The Opening Act, about stand-up comedy. It's a really in-depth look into stand-up comedy.
He's really passionate about it. We love him. He's such a great guy. And he did a movie about the magician, the
Amazing Jonathan that just came out, I think, on YouTube now. You can find it.
So have you gotten to see a final cut of Opening Act? Or
No, I haven't. Every other comic has seen it, you know, but I haven't.
Yeah.
Because I think Steve wanted some notes from the other comics, you know, to make it better, to make the cut better. But the actor should never see it, you know, because if I see it, I'll have too many notes that's just about me.
Right. It's got Tom Segura, Neil Brennan, Russell Peters,
Cedric the Entertainer, Bill Burr, Whitney. It's like the who's of comedy, and they all play a part in
did
it.
Did you have scenes with these people, or is it shot individually?
Yeah, I was the main character. I play like a young Steve going through to my first weekend in a stand-up comedy club. And so I had scenes with everyone, and it was cool. Some of these, like Cedric, Bill, are my heroes, and it was my first time meeting them. And it was just so cool.
He was effusive about them, and also he was saying how, you know, he wanted to make sure he got it tonally correct for what it's like.
Absolutely.
For a comedian.
Very
to
authentic.
Go through the process. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
cool. That's so awesome.
Yeah, that was super fun to do. And then right after that, I shot a reboot to Fantasy Island.
No.
Is this like a horror movie?
It's going to be a thriller.
Yeah.
It's very cool. It's a Blumhouse Sony production.
Well, Blumhouse is the horror division.
That's right.
So, a quick question on that. A lot of people don't realize. If you look at the early, the first Ricardo Montalban, Fantasy Island, there were elements of Twilight Zone-ish horror. And
very
then they did
much.
One with Malcolm McDowell that went a little bit more horror and a little bit more troubling. So this is actually, this is a good... basis for something to be a little bit darker.
Yeah, I think you see. Hopefully the trailer will come out soon. The movie's coming out in February of 2020. It's dark and it's very cool. Like, everybody goes in there with what they think is going to be their fantasy, and then it goes awry, just like the show.
Yeah. Nick just pulled up the casting. I'm looking at it right now. Michael Rooker's in this.
Yeah, amazing.
He's one of the most awesomely bizarre people we've ever met.
He's great.
Yeah.
Oh, he's great. And he was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
was
awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
He and was now he's doing NASCAR commercials, which are
is
really
he?
Good. Yeah.
Well, the first time I ever saw him was in a movie called Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. He was like one of his first. And he's, you know, the guy is nobody plays crazy like he does.
Oh, yeah. And you see it in this movie.
Are you a guest on the island?
I
okay,
I am
all right. So some weird stuff could happen to you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I think, and I'm going to say this. It was really nice meeting you. We're never going to see you again because your star is on the rise and you're going to be too big for us.
That is not true.
No, man. It's totally
hell,
true.
We almost didn't meet you the first time. You're in the damn building.
Yeah, wait till Crazy Rich Asian 3 comes out.
then you'll disconnect.
You guys will have to come to my mansion.
Great to meet you, Jimmy. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so nice to meet you.
Enjoy your time
guys.
In Philadelphia. Jimmy O'Yang. Yeah.
As the year draws to a close, 93.3 WMMR looks back at everything that rocked 2019 with our Top 25 Songs of the Year countdown. Vote for your favorites now at WMMR.com. Then, catch it New Year's Eve starting at 7 p.m. on 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
There is a BBC presenter, Radio 2 host. His name is Jeremy Vine.
Tonight on the BBC.
He had a call from a woman, Anne, from Chichester.
Oh, from here, local.
Yeah, I used to live in Chichester.
Upper Chi.
Oh.
Yeah, Jeremy, I love your show.
who was very excited about a butterfly that had taken up residence in her bedroom to hibernate. And so they talked about that for a little while. A little chit-chat about butterflies.
Tell me about this butterfly. Fascinating.
And then at the end of the call, he said, thanks for listening. Look after that butterfly. Bye, Anne. I love you. So he accidentally said, I love you to a woman he doesn't know at all. And it just kind of spilled out of him. And I love stories like this because the moment you do something like that, at least me, like the blood rushes from my head and I'm like, oh, why did I just do that? And I don't know that I've ever done I love you, but the only example that I have myself personally that I can recall doing that is being on the phone with my mom and after being done talking to her saying, okay, baby, take care.
Yeah.
Like it's your wife.
Like I was talking to my... All right, baby, thanks.
Baby.
I'm calling my mom, baby.
Yeah. Why don't you come over here and give daddy some sugar?
Yeah.
Mommy.
Oh, man.
I think that happens to everybody.
Oh, my God, yes.
Not with their mom, but just somebody else.
No, not everyone's having sex with their mom, but the truth
matters. Kathy got a text last week from a coworker that was not intended for her.
Well, that's just an accidental send, right? Yeah,
but it was like a few...
Was it graphic?
No. It just was like, you know, good morning, baby. And
let's try two fingers tonight.
But that's... I mean, not to that extent.
Let's try two fingers.
Oh, my God.
But I got a few texts, and finally I was like, you're texting the wrong person. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, hello, it's Kathy. And he was like, oh, my God.
Oh,
so sorry.
Are the names even similar? Like,
I don't know, because I don't know who he was texting.
Right. Okay. And then you wonder, so you got multiple.
Yeah.
So, and maybe you might let one go and hope that it's perceived that the mistake was made. But if it starts to come, frequently, you have to let them know.
Well, and now when
everyone's embarrassed.
Now when I pass them in the hallway, I just say, hey, baby.
Absolutely. I would have to.
I told you guys about this when it happened, but I was, helping coach baseball. And what I wanted to tell this kid on my son's baseball team, and this kid is a sixth grader at the time, is like, I love the way you hustle.
Yeah.
And I said, I love you. And I was like, I cannot believe I just told this young boy that I love you.
I'm just surprised at how your muscular development has come along.
Imagine this kid going to his parents and saying, Stranger danger.
Well, that's oh my why, God. It's why I talked to it on the air the very next day. I'm like, dude, I just told this kid that I love him.
Your phrasing is all, it's what's in your mind is the purest thing.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, and also with me, a lot of times, when I talk to my wife, love mm-hmm. you. I say it. That's how I end the sentence. Right. End the conversation. And I've done that before with friends where you forget exactly who you're talking to.
Yeah.
And love you.
Or it's just out of habit of wrapping up a phone call that because you do it, you speak to your wife on the phone so often.
Yeah. Or baby or a sweetheart. Mm-hmm. It happens.
This is a slight departure from what we're talking about, but my buddy has not gone back to this one pizza place that he used to love to go to because as he was leaving, he said to the guy something along the lines of like, all right, man, have a good one. But the guy goes, love you too. And he's like walking out the door. And he's like, I didn't say I love you. Like, that guy thinks I said I love you. And he has not been back since.
Or did I say I love you? I didn't. I thought I said take it easy. Hang on. I want to go to this caller. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
You're all naked and you tell me you love me.
It's Dr. Mike.
The wrong way. I don't take it as a sexual thing, Casey.
Well, yeah, but you're different. You say that to everybody. That's your thing.
And that's a good
thing. Look, it's not a thing. We all, listen, in this world, and I don't want to sound like a song, but the bottom line is it just shows a little bit of kindness and a little bit of love and compassion for our fellow human beings.
No, it's absolutely true, Mike, but let's say you were ordering a tile to be delivered to your house and you're on the phone with this guy for 5 minutes and you would accidentally end the conversation with, I love you, sweetheart.
I wouldn't say sweetheart.
Well, there you go. Well, that's the difference. Yeah.
If he got me the tiles on time, I'd say, you know what? I love you, man.
Yeah.
Maybe not love you, but love ya.
Yeah, right. That's a little different. Uh-huh. And listen, I love the fact that you do that. I think it's awesome. And I do love you, Mike. You've been so great to all of us.
Absolutely.
So that's definitely
sincere.
There's different levels of love. I mean, the bottom line is that you have someone you are romantically involved with. That's a certain level of love. But it's all about loving your fellow human beings because that's all we have, folks.
Well, you certainly, and we all understand that. But there are some times, and you'll agree to this, where someone blurts out something and they forget who they're talking to. And they get dramatically familiar with someone by accident. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. But spreading love, there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm all about it, Dr. Mike.
Well, anyway, I had to chime in.
No, you're the master, and you mean it when you say it. And we love you.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Right. Love you. We love you.
Love you.
All right. Love you.
He's the best.
He is the best. Hang on. I see a trend here on the phone lines. I'm going to go to Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer, are you there? Oh, wait, it's the wrong phone line. Sorry, I put you back on hold. Let's try this one. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
Good. All right, so this is not necessarily saying I love you, but something that just slips that was, you just say it out of habit.
Right.
What did you encounter or say?
So, actually, it's about my best friend growing up. We were best friends all growing up, and in school in fourth grade, so she was raised by her grandmother, and we were all in class. The class was completely full, and she said the teacher was speaking to her, and she responded with, okay, Grandma, in front of everybody.
Oh, my goodness.
Followed her all the way until, I moved away in middle school, but it was still a thing. She was still being made fun of in middle school.
Oh, my God.
Because you get into the zone.
Yeah.
Like you forget, and it happens.
And did the class? Did everybody laugh when she said it?
Oh yes, it was really really bad. It was bad that day, and it's like I said, it followed her for years.
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! Thank you, I appreciate it.
It could be far worse.
I'm going to follow that up with this one. I'm going to go to Matt. Hey Matt, good morning.
What's up? You guys rock.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. So you had something similar, right?
Yeah, so I was working for my buddies. They own like a little shop, like a mom and pop shop. And I was talking to his grandmother about like business and stuff, about just like, what was going on that day on the phone. And everybody was there. And so before I hang up, I say, all right, bye, Grandma. And I just hang up. I'm just like, that was weird. And my buddy, whose actual grandmother it is, he's standing there. He's like, why'd you call her grandma? I'm like, I don't know, man. I have no idea.
Hi, grandma. Is not your grandmother.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, whatever.
It's the way our brains work, especially when you get into a familiar conversation pattern.
I will go next to Steve. Hey, Steve.
Preston, did we just become best friends?
Yes. Yep. What's up, man? What did you want to share?
Samos.
Yeah.
So I'm the same way, Preston. I do it all the time, man. I'll call my mom hon. I'll call my wife. Well, I get in trouble with my wife when I call her mom.
Oh.
I got the kids and everything, so it's kind of easy to do that with my wife.
There's something Freudian going on there between you and your mom and your wife. And also, CQ is trying to get in touch with you. The Pacific Command is trying to get a message.
I thought he was playing Frogger.
Hang up.
I talked to somebody about this, and they said that the reason why people do this is because your loved ones are constantly on your mind nonstop. So it's very easy to be doing this to people, you know, that you love.
Yeah,
I think your mom is Morse coding you erotic messages.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. In all the years of having callers, I've never heard the. I've never heard that sound on the phones before. I will go next to Denise. Hi there, Denise.
Hi. How you guys doing, Gadzooks?
Gadzooks, Denise. What's your story?
Denise from Reading, Pennsylvania. I listen to you every morning.
Thank you.
Oh, man. So years ago, an underwriting center, I'm an underwriter talking to my boss on the phone about an expense account, trying to sell it. I want to write it. And at the end, I said, I love you, T.
All right.
Was there a pause? Was there a reaction?
Oh, my gosh, he hesitated. I said, I love you too, Bush.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah, like super inappropriate, but it happens.
It does. It absolutely does. All right, thanks. I appreciate it. There was... this is interesting. Somebody said, I accidentally said I love you to my boyfriend at the time, who I did not love.
No.
Yeah, that must have been, you've crossed a path that you can't.
That was a total mistake. I do not love you.
I do not love you. I hope you didn't take that the wrong way.
I would not want you to be encouraged about the prospects of this relationship.
Wow. And then there are other types of bizarre responses because if we do it out of habit, like somebody says, when people say happy birthday to you and you say, thanks, you too.
Oh, dude.
You know?
My mom has done that on a couple of different occasions. The best is my son, my brother was away at lacrosse camp and it was my mom's birthday and he's on the phone with her and I just hear her go, happy birthday to you. But clearly it was her birthday and we just all started cracking up. And then this year, on her birthday, before I left for work, I went downstairs, because obviously she's awake, and I said, hey, happy birthday, Grandma. She goes, happy birthday, Casey. And I just started cracking up laughing. I love that.
It's part of the deal. We'll get it sometimes when people call in, say, like it's you know, it's Dave on calling in.
Yeah.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah. Dave.
Say his own name. Because you're just, we have a brain fart moment.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
When people say, when you're like, you know, heading to the airport or whatever, and someone says, have a safe flight, and you're like, yeah, you too. Like, no. I'm not going to the airport.
No. What you heard was have a good day or something of that nature.
My favorite is, how's it going? Not much.
Yes!
I love that one.
Yeah. What's up? You too.
Or what's up? Good?
Yeah, thanks for calling. Not bad.
Casey, you were just trying to say, like, what's up, bro, to me the other day or something, and you addressed me. It was almost like I love you, man. Like you came up with some word that doesn't exist.
No,
and it was like jabroni or whatever. And I was just like, what? But as soon as you said it, you knew you had something. Had said something that made no sense whatsoever.
Preston, you were just commenting about a half hour ago. Why do I keep saying sports bug?
Oh, I'm supposed to say sports book.
And you say book?
In the Parks Casino. It's the best sports book around.
Why do I keep... And now because you're thinking about it, it's like when you bite the inside of your mouth and then proceed to bite it four more times.
That's been happening to me for years. Let me... Now this, I want to hear the story too. I'm going to go to Hannah. Hannah, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's happening?
Not much. How are you guys?
Wonderful. You too. No.
Yeah. So have a safe flight.
What's the story you wanted to tell us?
All right. Well, if I'm allowed, it's someone else's story that I would love to just let you guys laugh at, too. My brother-in-law, this has gone down in family history. He and his wife were youth leaders at their church, you know, heavily involved in the youth group, and they were all on a hiking trip. So they're kind of behind, and he thinks it's his wife, and he just gets a nice handful of the girl in front of him, and it is a youth member.
Oh, my God. Grabbed her ass?
Oh, God.
Grabbed her ass.
Yep.
Oh, no.
So, that's a tough one. I know, no repercussions. It was all, you know, it was all understood that it was mistaken identity.
He must have wanted to die.
Yeah.
You've had those. I've had a moment where I was... it was like an H&M, and I was going in, and I was just with my wife, and she was shopping, and I rounded a corner, and then someone who looked a lot like her, and I was starting to go over and just kind of put my hands on this person's shoulder, and then I realized it was not my wife. Same short hair, same sort of thing, same build.
And you stopped?
And I stopped. But in this day and age, that's a tough sell to say.
Yeah.
I told you guys a story one time at a 7-Eleven back when I was in high school. I thought it was my friend.
I thought it's one of my favorite stories.
It was my friend Tom, who he had his back to me, and I was gonna surprise him with a big bear hug. You know, one of those type where you reach around and lift him up.
Hey.
It was some dude I'd never met before in my life, and I was like, dude, I swear to God, I thought you were somebody else.
Well, I thought Kathy was driving into the parking lot one morning, and I stopped in the middle of the parking lot and flipped her the double bird. Wasn't Kathy at all.
Casey did a herky in front of people.
Oh, that's right.
In front of his own home.
Dude.
Who'd you think it was?
It was Jeff and Melissa. They were coming to pick me up. It was their car that was coming down my road. I don't know who it was. I did a herky for him, and then they drove past me. I was like, that was a herky.
The idea, though, of you, Preston, some guy thinking he's about to be raped.
Yes.
I'm lucky I didn't get my ass kicked.
Oh, my God. Thank God he listened to you.
Yeah. I was walking down the street with a pumpkin bucket filled with beer going to, actually, Matt Cord's house. We were at the shore. This was years ago. And I was going to Matt Cord's house. And a friend of ours was driving over. And so I see the car down the street. And I'm texting the person. I said, we're pulling up now. So, of course, I think it's them. I stand in the middle of the street with my pumpkin bucket filled with beer and flip off the car. It was a police officer.
Oh, my God.
I was like, he pulled up next and rolled his window down. I mean, I thought he was going to kill me. I was like, oh, my God. It was like somebody's coming down the street. It was a friend of mine. I thought they were coming. I'm so sorry.
Did he laugh? He
did not laugh. Okay. He rolled up his window. He didn't say one word to me, and he drove away.
Oh, my God.
Hang on. Just a bullet.
I want to get some more calls on the line. Kevin, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How you guys doing?
Good. What's up, man?
So I had a story. It's not my, like, personally, but it's my sister.
Yeah.
And, like, we always kind of make fun of her for it. So she was at a funeral for her friend's dad, who just, like, recently died. And so, like, you know, she was saying, like, sorry for your loss and everything to the family. And so she was like, to the family, she was like, thanks for having me. I kind of slipped up a little bit.
Thanks for the invite. Yeah.
You say things like, oh, it's great to see you. And you're like, no.
I've said before to somebody who's grieving, how's it going?
Yeah.
Yeah, or how you doing?
Right.
How you doing?
Oh,
yeah.
Geez, and the moment it leaves your mouth. I've said the same thing, Kevin, because they'll say thanks for coming, and I think I've said, well, thanks for having us, you know, or something like that. Oh, man.
My pleasure.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thanks for coming. No, my pleasure.
That's when, especially at funerals, me personally anyway, I mean, every single thing that I utter about you talk about thinking too hard about it.
Yes.
And then you say the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had that happen.
Well,
on multiple occasions.
We were at Harry's funeral, Steve McLean's. Casey comes.
Well, you made a joke.
I guess that was it.
That was great.
Well,
Casey,
what did I say?
Casey, come. You go. You come in and you go, I almost S my pants on the way over here. And without missing a beat, and we're all standing around, Casey walks up and he goes, God, I almost just crap my pants coming here. And Steve, without missing a beat, goes, well, we all grieve in our own ways. And we died laughing at this memorial service.
Yeah. Inside the funeral. Yeah.
They were like, wow, look at Steve's friends all laughing.
I ended up telling Steve McLean about it, and he thought Harry would have found that very, very funny. So
We should, however, have a different segment about... What is the best thing to say? So you can sort of practice these things. You always see in movies where people practice like meeting a girl for the first time or what they're going to say to their boss or whatever. But
yeah,
and I've never done anything like that. However,
I mean the obvious ones are I'm so sorry, for your loss, my condolences. I mean, and while they seem to be, you know, rote and all of that, they're the most effective.
Yeah.
It does convey it. People understand. No one is. God forbid you're the kind of person who's at home in a funeral situation because your life is miserable if that's the case.
Yeah.
But I think it's understood.
I say one thing and then that's it. Like, you know, I'll say one of those things. I'll introduce myself if I don't know the people
the
and why I'm
it.
There.
You
and
just
say,
being there is enough.
Right. But then you say, you know, so sorry for your loss. But then don't continue to talk because then that's when the things that don't make sense are going to come out of your mouth.
Yeah. Have a good flight.
Yeah. Right? Yes. Exactly. Yes.
Like, what if the person in front of you says what you were going to say? It's like, well, I can't say that.
You stole my line.
Yeah.
Hang on, let's go back to the saying the wrong thing or, you know, saying a standard response you're used to saying it just isn't appropriate for what that was. Or, these are other good ones. Well, let me do this one.
All right.
Yes.
There's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Alex real quick here. Alex, good morning.
Hey, guys. You guys rock.
Hey, thanks, man. All right, so what was your situation?
So, me and my girlfriend, Chloe, were dating for about a month at the time. And, you know, we were cooking a nice dinner. We had some drinks and, we came in and we gave each other a hug and she said something. I think she said hi or hey, you. And I just like, I took it as I love you. And I looked at her, I just kind of pulled her away and I looked her in the eyes and I was like, I love you too. And she was like, she looked at me and she was like, I didn't say I love you.
I said hi.
And you tried to do like something sincere. Let me pull away the hug there.
What I said is, I don't love you.
I was so sincere. I was like, I love you too.
Oh, you took it as the moment.
Alex, what happened after that? I mean, how much longer did you guys date? And did you end up using the words, I love you, after that?
Well, we are still together today. Oh, it was 2 years ago.
There you go. And
I was just so embarrassed. I think I just went to the bathroom and sat down.
Rubbed
for
one out.
Bit.
Yeah. Do you have any tissue in the back?
I'll be right back.
Yeah. This will solve everything.
I need to tap this off. Here, I made this for you.
Thanks, Alex.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's a tissue sculpture. Yeah.
It'll be hard in a day.
Yeah. All right, let me go.
It's indestructible origami.
Let me go to Katie. Hi, Katie. Good morning.
Gadzooks, good morning.
Gadzooks, Katie, what's up?
All right, so one winter, my fiance, we've been together 12 years, but my little sister, we were all shoveling outside.
Mm-hmm.
Came inside. I was using the restroom in our mudroom. My little sister was trying to take her boots off. We do look very similar. She was bending over, trying to take her boots off. My fiancé turned the corner and proceeded to credit card her, thinking it was me.
Down her butt?
I literally credit card her.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when you...
Yeah, you take your hand, like, you straighten it out, and then you run it up somebody's butt crack. Like you're swiping a credit card.
Yeah.
Denied.
So he did that to her while I was literally on the other side of the door going to the bathroom. And all I hear is, oh, my God. And my sister just started belting out laughing. I opened the door, and the look on their faces was, like, unbelievable. Like, I caught them, but they both knew that it was an accident.
So, and you understand you look enough alike that he was thrown off. You bought it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We get mistaken as twins regardless of the age difference, so I did understand it, so it was one of those occasions.
Casey, it just reminds me of it's a totally different thing, but if I were to do something like that, it would be like when you saw me naked in the bathroom. There wasn't any toilet paper. I didn't know that was you. I thought it was somebody else. Just frantically screaming at them.
Right. Other times he's mistaken each other us for, you know, but that was the most, I guess, vulgar way of.
Oh, yeah. That's straight up proctological.
Thank you.
A friend of mine is a painter, and he was doing some work for a client. He said, I moved a carpet for a client whose husband had died the week before. It was so heavy. I said, what, do you have a dead body in here?
Oh.
He said, I almost threw up after I said
it. Oh, my God.
God.
You know, like your husband.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
You know, like your dead husband.
Your dead husband who died just a week ago. Probably didn't love you. Anyway. I better stop talking. Have a good flight.
Oh, my God. That'll be the out of every conversation.
Have a good flight.
I'm going to go to John with his story. Hi, John. You're on the air.
What's up, guys? Love the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. So tell your story.
So... we had a fair. I was about 12 years old, and my brother and I just got off the ride. My parents were there. My mom was
You're
sick.
At a carnival, it says here, right?
The ride of life.
Yeah, like a carnival fair. Yeah. And we got off the ride, and I'm looking around for my dad, and I see my mom on the bench, so I walk up to her, and as I mentioned, she wasn't feeling good. So I start rubbing her back, saying, where's dad? And she didn't answer, and then I said, Mom, how you feeling? And she didn't answer, so I look down. This lady's staring at me like, who the hell are you?
Whoa.
And and my mom woke up behind me like 3 seconds later and saying, what are you doing over here? I'm like, let's just walk away.
We're going to go now.
I just walked away. Like,
wait, okay. Call me.
They're just mortified.
I was so embarrassed. Oh, my God, it was horrible.
Especially if you're the kind of person, like, Preston, with your wife or, you know, I casually, you know, I'll grab my wife or, you know, it's a natural thing, you know? So when you're like at a party or out and about, it's just, it's kind of a perfunctory thing, but it's good to just quickly double check if you're out in public.
Yes, agreed. I'll go to Mike next. Hey, Mike. Mike, you there, bud?
Mike?
Mike's not there. He said he accidentally shouted pickup lines to a woman who wasn't his wife.
Right.
Let me go to, I'll go to Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, what's up?
Yeah, bud. We want to hear your story. Go for it.
All right. So I'm on my honeymoon. We're in Bora Bora, and a boat trip kind of dropped us off to this side island. No one was, there was about four other couples getting dropped off. And I'm underwater. Yeah, there's manta rays and there's fish. I'm underwater snorkeling, and I think my wife's leg is, I think my wife is right in front of me, and I'm making this Jaws da-na-na-na-na sound, okay, through the snorkel. I grab her leg and start pulling it to hearing screams. I get up out of the water. You know, I got my goggles on, the whole nine yards. I flip the goggles up. I see my wife about 30 feet away from me and this little Japanese girl screaming, and I see her husband. I'm like, oh, my God, I am so sorry. And she can't even understand me because she's speaking Japanese. She was completely mortified, and we had nowhere to go. Like, the boat dropped us off. This girl for the next, like, 30 minutes, and she was completely uncomfortable.
And for about 5 seconds, this woman thought she was being attacked by an underwater sea creature of some sort.
That's great. And she's Japanese. She cannot possibly understand.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, that's just a nightmare.
Going back to the funeral thing, we're going to have to wrap up in a moment here. I'm going to get Jeremy on. Hey, Jeremy, good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, good. So you were at a funeral.
Yeah, it's a funeral for my friend's daughter who died in childbirth.
Oh.
And I walked up and he's like, thanks for being here. And I go, it is what it is, man.
Oh,
dude.
And why do you think you said that?
I had no idea. My wife looked at me and goes, what?
That's like saying it is, man. Ain't no thing.
Yeah, right. You got this, bro.
People get so nervous, and in terrible situations like that, they just don't know what to do. And
Did you apologize, Jeremy? Did you apologize?
oh, yeah. Later on, I was there. I'm like, I'm so sorry, man. And his brother goes, hey, at least you didn't throw a fist bump.
Right, fist bump.
Wow. Oh, that's horrible.
No one knows what to do. You know, it's an uncomfortable situation. I think most people understand that, too.
Okay, wait. There's two more calls I have to go to.
All right. Oh, my.
First, let me go to Deborah because she was in first, but there's another one I got to get to. Let me go to Deborah. Hi, Deborah. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Wonderful. What's up, Deborah?
So about 18 years ago, I got married to my husband. He's got an unusual name. His name is Duron.
Duron.
And okay. We were Duron. So we just got married. We were sitting in the car with my father, my sister, and my new husband. And I turned around to my husband and he bugged me. I can't remember what he said, but he bugged me. And I went, oh, for God's sake, Peter.
He's
an old boyfriend.
He knows an old boyfriend.
Oh, my God.
You called an old boyfriend's name. Oops. And
after how, you were married.
How did that go over?
We were married about 2 weeks.
And wow. That was it?
That was it.
Oh my! Wait!
No!
So,
no! Shh.
Oh, you had been married for about 2 weeks. I'm like, we were married for 2 weeks, and then we got a divorce over. After that.
What did you call me?
No, Deborah, you're still married to him, right? You said 18 years.
Okay.
All right. Now, will you sometime call him Peter just for fun?
Yes.
Now, of course you will.
When we're in a moment.
Of course.
In your moment.
Yeah, I'm married to an Irish woman as well. So
thank you, Deborah.
I'm Scottish.
Oh, she's Scottish.
Okay.
Beautiful. Thank you. Take care.
Okay, you guys rock. Bye.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. This we'll end on this one because I don't know if you can get better than this. I'm going to go to Joe. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Hey, have a good flight, guys.
Oh, thanks, man. So you too. Not much.
Well, I want to set the backstory of this story okay. Before I say, but my father passed away about 15 years ago, and my friend, who is a nurse, took care of him, and he died. He died of liver failure, so his body swelled up, and his junk area was pretty big, I guess, if you want to say.
Right, right.
And I'm standing in the funeral procession line. I'm standing next to my sister, my brother, and my mother, and obviously, you know, we're all crying, and you know, the whole nine yards. So he comes up to me and says, you know, real quiet in the nursing home, says, that is day. Your dad's junk's still bigger than yours.
Wow.
And I lost it. I laughed. I had to leave the funeral home. But my mother and my sister had the look of
disgust.
It was, and my brother, who was laughed, but he was pissed, but he laughed again. It was the funny. I had to leave the nursing home or the funeral parlor, and I couldn't.
Wait, were they mad at you or the person for saying it?
They're mad at my friend for saying it, but in the context, it made me laugh. It was the funniest thing I ever heard of.
It helped you,
yeah.
So, but I can also understand someone being a little put off by that. But it is what it is. To quote an earlier caller,
funerals. You know, you're taking a risk. You may really lighten it up for somebody, but you also might say the exact thing they don't want to hear. So,
yeah.
Better to play it straight.
Or if you're going to say it, say directly to the person you think will enjoy it and don't say it to the audience. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He comes over every once in a while to the house, and my mom's still like, you know, she's not mad at him, but she looks at him every once in a while with I was like, Mom, don't worry about it. His junk's not that big anymore.
No. Nice show. Appreciate it, man. All right. Well, interesting calls. And listeners, always somebody who said something worse out there, most likely.
MMR's day off on the slopes at Jack Frost Mountain, Friday, January 10th.
Look out below!
Celebrate winter with the best lift ticket deal out there, along with a Pierre Robert live broadcast and a legendary happy hour with Jackson live from E2000 Lounge. Listen up. There's still time to save money on your lift tickets. Ski the day with us for $20 through our pre-sale. Available while supplies last or until noon on January 8th. WMMR.com has all the details. MMR's Day Off on the Slopes. Sip, ski, and be merry. Friday, January 10th at Jack Frost Mountain from JFBB, where the snow comes first. And 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
I'd say that our next guest looked like the most lucid post-show rock stars who to come in for a morning show that I've ever seen. We're used to rock star, we don't do morning thing.
Yeah.
These guys look raring to go, and we're happy to have them. They played a show last night at the Met with Alter Bridge and Skillet. Ladies and gentlemen, Dirty Honey.
Yeah.
Here this morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Are you normally this awake and chipper?
Well, we were excited about coming into WMMR, so
excellent.
We,
you know, had a little coffee, and you know, we're going to suck it up for the next hour.
Excellent.
Whatever.
Well, listen, I had, before they came on, and by the way, we have Mark and John and Justin and Corey are the members of the band. I saw our program director, Bill Weston, over talking with Mark for a moment there.
It's great to have you here on the Mo Show.
Yeah, and he was, they were. I guess maybe Bill was describing a certain type of music. He was calling it like knuckle-dragging rock or something like that. And Mark said, well, what would you call us? And he didn't seem to really have an answer for it. Or was that you that said that? I'm Justin, sorry. Yeah. I just overheard. So that was Justin who said that.
What would you say the answer is?
I'd say you're rock and roll. The words rock and roll together.
Thank God.
Describe that sound, because it's bluesy, it's gritty, it's got some balls and some heart to it. You know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean. That's why we're doing it.
Good. Okay.
You hit it spot on.
All right.
Very impressed.
Now, you guys, as far as history of the band goes, you're from all over the place. You didn't grow up together. Sometimes you hear that story. These guys, we went to high school together and all that.
No. I met John on guitar here in L.A. He sat in for the guitar player I was doing a gig with, and then he introduced me to Justin. Justin introduced us to Corey, and then that was sort of the genesis of Dirty Honey.
But you guys hail from all over the country,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm from upstate New York. John's from Bangor, Maine.
Okay,
nice. Corey's from Oregon, and he's the only L.A. native.
All right.
And 2 years ago, you guys, pretty much?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Wow.
Preston has been talking. We all, you know, this is a conversation that's been coming up more and more, and it encourages us now because, you know, obviously music goes through cycles.
Yeah.
But, pure regular rock, you know, the way... And I know people have different impressions of rock, but you know rock when you hear it.
Yeah.
You guys are rock. You can take something and hold it up. It's like what grunge brought to rock when we're coming out of another phase of the sort of a glamour rock.
Sure.
You knew that, but you can take something and work it different ways. And I sense, like with you and other bands that we're seeing come up that have an appreciation for a sound they're not hearing as much as they would like. It feels good. Do you feel that as well?
Yeah, I think it's very easy to be perfect in this like digital age we're living in, and that's not good for rock and roll at all. So, you know, when we did our record, we just got back to the roots and had four guys in a room playing songs together, and like it sounds very organic and soulful and raw, and that's what we were going for.
So. Here's the thing: can you do that acoustically? Oh, yeah, we can. You guys were just rehearsing, and it sounded great.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, is a good litmus test of, and I think people appreciate just the awe of musicians getting in their with their instruments and making stuff happen in a room in an intimate situation or in a large venue.
It's the goal, and, I think songwriting, you know, is always key. If you can write great songs, they're going to sound great on acoustic or with a band or whatever, but... A lot of the melodies at least start with, you know, acoustic guitars.
And, yeah.
You know, and then when you bring it in, you start bashing around and turning the amps up. It takes on a whole new life. So
what's a writing session with you guys like? Is it just sitting around messing around, or do you say it's time to work?
I mean,
you know?
The one we're working on.
Video games? Yeah.
Texting?
Texting.
Yeah, okay. Hey, I got something cool.
Oh, there's that's something that's cool that you know, some of our predecessors didn't have was the immediacy of it all.
Yeah.
Is that you can write and play a lick on the guitar, send it to you, and go, hey, what do you think of this? Or, you know, hey, I got these lyrics, or, you know, I got this melody in my head, and then send it to you. That's something that that didn't, and you can do it from across the world. You don't even have to be in the same city or anything.
It happened the other day, literally. He had an idea that he was working on soundcheck maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago that we were all like, that's awesome. And then I was walking around New York City, something popped into my head, I sent it to him, and, you know, a couple hours later, he's like, what if we took that thing from, you know, a couple weeks ago and we blended and we played it at soundcheck and it was awesome.
It's really, really cool. Yeah, and so what I like about your sound is that, you know, it's reminiscent of something. And I can't necessarily put my finger on it, but you're not trying to be something.
Right.
And so what I mean by that is a friend of mine was, we were playing golf the other day, and we play golf while listening to music, and he played a couple of country songs for me. I really liked the first one. The second one, I said, this is stupid because he's trying to do something with this song.
Yeah, he's talking about trucks and boats.
The sound.
And his dog and the woman who left him.
Yeah, okay. To me, the sound, it sounded very insincere, and, you know, we're like, okay, well, this is going to be this type of song.
Yeah.
And so when you write a good song, it's
just a good song and it's not a gimmick and you're not trying to do something, right?
It should be just, it should just happen sort of naturally, and you should, I think ultimately a listener should just feel something, you know, feel passion or feel sadness or soul or whatever. But yeah, I don't feel much from modern day country, that's for sure.
You're not in the studio going, okay, man, well, this is going to be the one where the crowd is going to go like, hey,
oh, no.
Hey, you know, like
we're not building in those whoa. Yeah. We were on the air in LA one day and we had to do like a smash or trash thing with the radio station, and we felt so bad. This band sent in a song that was like just modern rock, drop D, and
it was awful. Yeah,
they were like, the chorus was like, oh, and fortunately the DJ was like, ah, that was just terrible.
Yeah, he took the. Yeah, we were all like, and then one guy just laid into it. We were like, well, you know, it's a good production. And I was just like, I would never do this.
Our assistant program director hates. Anytime there's a forced sing-along or if somebody screams out an instrument name, guitar! It's not allowed.
Yeah, so. We're trying to avoid going into a reggae arrangement, too, in the middle of a solo section.
Did you have a list of, like, is there the golden rule, the three don'ts when writing songs?
I think we just touched on a bunch.
Yeah, you got them all?
You just wrote the list for us.
There you go, yeah.
Nice. I try and get Corey to do, like, a train groove on the drum sometimes, and he's just like, I'm never.
He's got train grooves.
Yeah. I'll
get him one day.
This is not going to mean anything to you guys, but I don't know if you guys know, Corey here looks like our afternoon guy Jackson with big hair.
Yes!
Yeah. Like really
Jackson. Corey Jackson. That's your new nickname.
He's a handsome man.
He's a good-looking fella, so definitely.
Yeah.
And Justin has the most rock and roll hair I've seen in quite a while. Yeah, I am happy
cool,
to see
rock
hair. Yours
that's
is cool. Solid.
That's cool.
But you're going to play second fiddle to him every time, man. Well, listen, the song, we heard you warm up with it. We've been playing When I'm Gone, and I assume that's what you're going to play for us now, if that's cool.
It's fine with us.
Let's do it, man. This is Dirty Honey, guys. They are live here in the studio on MMR. Check it out.
Jesus.
Damn. Dirty Honey on 93.3 WMMR. When I'm gone, what?
He goes, get ya.
Get ya.
Just
try to
throw the pick of me on it.
Yeah.
Hey.
I'm going to need that back.
Hey, I wanted to ask, with bands that that are starting to rise and come into their own and get a little bit more airplay and a little bit more visibility and audibility, if that's even a word, you're going to get comparisons, and it's just what happens. People, when they hear a new band, go, oh, it sounds a little like this, or it sounds a little bit like that.
Here we go.
Is it bother you? I'm not going to, I can bring them up, but this, what's that?
You told me to this morning.
Yeah. In your voice, I hear a little bit of Jeff Keith from Tesla. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard that before or not.
Yeah.
I hear a mix of some Black Crowes and Guns N' Roses.
Nice.
All good stuff. All some of my favorite things. And your vocals in particular are of a higher register. We haven't had a whole lot of that for a while. For one, am happy to see it come back. There was an overload of it in the late 1980s, and then it kind of went away for a while, which is fine. But, you know, there's Miles Kennedy who can really hit those spots. And
he's the man, by the way.
Yeah, and you guys have toured with those guys.
Yeah, we're
or
out
played
with him
shows.
Right now, and we were out with him and Slash before this tour that we just started. And he's just been, like, so supportive of the band, and he's a really good dude. And he's like, you know, I've learned so much from him already, and he's become a really good friend, so we're really happy to be out with him again.
And there's another band that's been having some success lately, which is Greta Van Fleet. And obviously, they sound a lot like Led Zeppelin. I mean, they do. And we get positives and negatives on that in the feedback. And some people hate it, and I'm like, I like it, you know, and cool that's all there is to it. It just sounds
you know? Yeah, I don't get it. It's a weird reaction because it's like they're clearly writing solid songs.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, but what did Led Zeppelin ever do?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, these comparisons are going to fizzle after a while as you guys continue to crank it out, you know?
Eddie Vedder got it about Jim Morrison.
Yeah. Yes. You're right.
Yeah.
You know,
and Eddie got over it. So, you know.
The Tesla one is crazy. We get that all the time. I don't know any songs, but I really don't.
Yeah.
Well, they did.
We're all like, oh, cool.
We love the Guns N' Roses and Black Rose, though, that's for sure. And,
no, but it's like, that's very common.
Okay.
And I'm just like, we get Tesla a lot, and we're all just like,
they were good straight ahead.
Yeah,
American
like
rock
signs
band.
And those signs.
Yeah.
That's
not even their
song.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Does it ever bother you, the comparisons?
It's so vast, man. Like the rate, it goes, you get people be like, oh, it's kind of like Led Zeppelin, but it's kind of like the Black Crowes. It's kind of like Guns N' Roses.
Here's the thing.
Yeah,
if a fan, most of the time they're saying it because they love that band and they love you. So it really doesn't matter what they say.
Right.
It's a compliment no matter what.
Right. I also hear a little Fiona Apple in there, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say that. And if I believed you were sincere, which I don't, I would take that as a compliment. Yeah.
So, Mark, let me ask you, because you were talking about Miles Kennedy and how he's sort of giving you some tips and stuff like that. How do you take care of your voice? Because, I mean, you really, really go after it.
A lot of warm-ups and just doing that, but a lot of water.
A lot of water.
Fiji water.
Here's your endorsement. Here's the tour.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Water companies make a lot of money. They just, like, open up the tap and put it in a bottle and send it to the grocery store.
This is from Fiji. Yeah.
What about booze? Is that something you got to be mindful of?
Well, we get tequila every night.
You
got
to be mindful.
How great is it to have a rider?
We always have it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It does help.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have a quirky thing in your rider, or you do a...
This moron over here. He's gross. So we have, you know, medicinal marijuana. It's a thing, you know, and
listen,
even if it's not medicinal, he doesn't care. He's going to smoke it anyway. He's got it on our rider. We're going into, like,
why not?
Bible Belt states with a rider that says, like, we must have marijuana, you know, whatever. And
it's all the rage. Right, yeah, exactly.
I think it's really, really cool that you guys came in the day after the gig. You don't have a show in Philly that you're trying to sell tonight, which is awesome. But you did play an amazing venue last night. It's new for us, or relatively new. The Met, it's been around for, I guess, about less than a year. What were your impressions of that place?
It's a beautiful theater. And it's run by Live Nation, which is cool. And they do a great job keeping it super professional when you walk into any of their places.
And acoustically, it's everyone raves about, you know. Did you, I assume, do you walk the room before you play? Just to,
I did. Yeah. It was so boomy because it's so big and empty when nobody's in there. And then everybody complimented us on the sound, actually, last night. So
that's great.
That was cool.
Yeah, we got a few texts from people who went to the show last night said you killed it.
So. Yeah, I figured you guys wouldn't be there if you got to be up at early.
We just made you get in early here.
Yeah. Do you have another song that you can play?
Sure,
or
can.
I guess we're going to hear maybe
we
Rolling
just
Sevens?
The video, yeah. For
yeah,
this
I just
the other
saw
day,
that. Yeah.
And, all right. I'm sure you'll be hearing it on WMMR soon.
Dirty Honey, this is Rolling Sevens. Here we go.
No need for fantasies, babe. I'll shine on like a star in the night. I'll show you all you need. Cause I know all your vices. And I know I'm rolling sevens again now. When you need a little loving, baby, all night long. When you need a little loving, sugar, turn me on. When you need a little loving, baby, all night long. When you need a little loving, oh if you'll be the queen. Cause I know all your vices. And you know where I've been. Said, baby, take another toss of the dice. I'm rolling sevens again now. But when you need a little loving, baby, loving, sugar, turn me on. When you
That's awesome.
Roland Sevens, and that is from Dirty Honey, played last night at the Met. Out on the road with Alter Bridge and Skillet. You guys playing several shows with them, continuing on for a little while?
We are done October 27th, I believe, and then we go and open for Guns N' Roses in Vegas. For
wow. That's got to be a mind F, you know. Yeah. First
it's definitely
off,
a mind F. That was the words I was thinking yeah. this whole time.
The whole time. Because let's stop and think about it. For years and years, no one ever thought, Guns N' Roses would ever be back yeah. together. Now they're back together. Now you're, you know, opening for them. I mean,
it's crazy.
It's got to be a level of surrealness, yeah.
It's crazy.
Did Flash have a hand in that in getting you guys to open for Gene R since you played with the Conspirators?
We barely even talked to Slash when we were out with them, just because you don't want to, like, he's such a celebrity. You don't want to, like, fanboy on him.
And, yeah.
So the night in Cleveland, the night before the last show was in Cleveland, and we actually got to talk to him for a minute, and he was so nice and so complimentary and loved the band, and we were just, like, shaking. It was so cool. And then the next night, we ended the tour in Nashville. And Slash turned to me and he goes, so this is it, huh? This is the end of the road. And I was like, yeah. And he, like, kind of tongue-in-cheek was just like, think we'll see you again. And he gave me a little wink. And then the next day.
Oh, whoa, dude, oh that's so cool.
I was like, it's an effort, dude.
It's a
mother Yeah. Yeah, it was
Of course
cool.
it is.
Wow.
Yeah, well, he's the man.
We're really happy for you guys. It's great music, and we're happy to see you doing well. We're glad you could come by for a visit.
Thanks for having us, man. It's been a pleasure.
Continued success. Thanks for being here. Ladies and gentlemen, Dirty Honey.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Great band.
Listen to all the WMMR podcasts as well as a live stream on your Alexa-enabled device. Just say, Alexa, open MMR.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre Final.
All right, let's see. Where do we begin? We'll start with this one. This is the story of a naked man jumping on a car with a mom behind the wheel and her two young kids in the back seat.
That's beautiful.
Dreka Drake.
Dreka Drake?
Yeah, she is. She has the video to prove it. Dreka Drake in the video says, you see the man wandering into traffic was a man who was wearing only socks. Mm. She said one was black and the other one was white.
Can't even match his socks.
I had a friend with me and we were laughing. He was walking up to cars and he saw us. The video shows a man approaching Dreka Drake's car. Dreka Drake. And within seconds, he was on the hood, pressing himself against the windshield and fondling himself. So he's smushing his bits on the window.
That's unpleasant.
She said, I told my kids to cover their eyes. I didn't know what to do next.
Safe flight repair.
He refused to get off the car, and he had a smirk on his face, apparently. That's Dreka Drake's song or theme song. I didn't know what that was. All right, anyway. he refused to get off the car, and he had a smirk on his face, and that's when I started driving forward, and he still wouldn't get off.
It occurs to me that that's somewhat provocative.
Drake prepared to hit the brakes, and she said that he seemed to know what was coming next. She said he put one hand up as if to say, don't punch the brakes, but I did. According next to her description, the man flew off the car onto the pavement. His exposed parts hit the concrete. Ow. And he rolled over several times. Unfazed, she said the man got up and started approaching other cars. She said, I didn't see I'm sorry, I didn't stay to see what happened next. We got the hell out of there.
Why would you hang around?
But she didn't report the incident to Houston police at the time, but she says she plans to now. So, good luck. Why is she doing nothing?
Joe wanted to wait a little bit and just ruminate on things.
A medical examiner with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation was suspended for 2 weeks after complaints that she made inappropriate comments while handling the remains of a dead woman. Dr. Sandra Thomas, who has never faced any other complaints since joining the agency in 2014, has expressed regret and has returned to work.
Look, I'm going to make it sing. Honestly, you need to have some respect for the dead, especially when you're in that job.
Yeah, she asked another, apparently during the autopsy, she asked another doctor at the morgue if she knew how to do a Muslim autopsy. The other doctor said Thomas then lifted the neck of the dead woman and made a wailing sound called a ululation.
Like a...
I guess. Since the times of ancient Greece and Egypt, ululation is signified times of both mourning and celebration. It's generally heard at funerals and weddings in the Middle East.
Yes.
Thomas repeated the question and sound with another doctor. The doctor also found the remark inappropriate during an investigation.
Hey, look at this!
Thomas expressed regret for her actions. The GBI suspended her, and she had to sign a document acknowledging that another inappropriate action will result in her term.
You would like to think that your loved ones are cared for.
There's a certain amount of reverence.
Instead of putting sunglasses and cigarettes in their mouth.
Right. So anyhow, in December in 2018, there was an employee that took a photo of another smiling while posing with a severed head of an elderly murder victim. Those employees were fired. So they don't
That's gruesome.
They don't put up with that stuff. 46 ice cream trucks were seized from owners who allegedly amassed 22,000 traffic fines, totaling about $4.5 million since 2009, and evaded paying the hefty debt, according to New York City officials.
How fast are they driving these ice cream trucks?
The seizure was
known.
Kids
can't even catch up.
The seizure was known as Operation Meltdown.
I like that.
Comes after the truck owners allegedly amassed the traffic violation fines through a scheme in which dozens of shell companies were created to avoid enforcement efforts by the city's Department of Finance. So this is a full-on scam. The complaint alleges that the group operated companies that accrued 22,000 summonses for violations.
Wow.
Including running red lights, parking near fire hydrants, blocking pedestrian crosswalks. What the hell was that?
They're going very fast.
Do it again.
Play it again.
All right. Hit play.
You can't speed it up?
Speed it up more.
I tried.
Okay.
My bad!
So anyhow, the alleged scheme was based off a periodic, systematic, and repeated re-registration.
I thought you were going to sing Grease Lightning.
It's periodic, systematic, what's Grease Ice Cream? All right, we're done with this.
Oh, man.
They were bad people.
There wasn't much.
That was it. The bulk of the story had been imparted.
Yeah.
It feels like we're in the goddamn Twilight Zone.
It really does.
Oh, my God.
All right, one more story then.
Okay.
A man in Central Florida told deputies he poured salt on the floor of a Walmart store to get rid of the evil spirits that were around him.
Did it work?
You know what? I don't know if they verified that or not.
Honestly, how would you be able to know that at a Walmart?
The Pasco Sheriff's Office arrested 38-year-old Damon Dean Cantrell.
Well, to be honest, Lou, I haven't seen any demons. They might have worked.
Sunday morning, a store manager told investigators a man poured salt on the floor and on his feet before walking into the woods nearby the store.
If you break the salt circle, though, demons will be able to penetrate.
It's like Manitou, Steve.
Absolutely. Did we learn nothing from that Tony Curtis film?
The manager said that he wanted the man charged with trespassing. A deputy found Cantrell laying under some trees in the woods.
I did my job.
He was still on Walmart property. So they arrested.
Another Walmart saved.
There you go. Listen, I've seen things that look like demons in Walmart.
Absolutely.
Many times.
Usually wearing stretch pants.
Yeah. And that is the B-File.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Dinosaur Pilo. I'm always on the back foot.
Godsmack.
Under your scars, I pray. You're like a shooting star in the rain.
The Struts.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
All right, we are all set to go. Our guest has arrived. Good afternoon. Good morning.
What's up in my
late? Good day, I should say.
You're actually early per our original assessment. You're kicking ass already.
Yeah. Thank you. We are excited, ladies and gentlemen, to have in our studio actor David Harbour.
Yeah!
Thank you. I'm so excited I said good afternoon when it's 9:20 in the morning.
There are a bunch of footlongs outside the studio, which is like,
yeah.
The 9 in the morning footlong, though. Yeah.
Do you know Pink's in Hollywood?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
That's them.
Are those from there?
They just expanded
to the then
east.
Bring me one. I mean, come on. It's still a hot dog.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's not a... It's, classic breakfast fare, but it works. It's very good.
We never actually get breakfast food here. It's always never. Like
it's
that.
Always a really? Dinner thing, yeah. But it all works.
And all that stuff.
We've been up since 3:45.
Yeah, exactly. So it is kind of dinner out. For you guys.
David, where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I'm from White Plains, New York.
Know it well.
Yeah, yes. Do you know it?
I'm from New York, yeah.
Okay, Westchester guy, like 45 minutes out from the city, you know, suburban. Very boring place to grow
nice.
Up.
if you work in the city, it's a nice area to be in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I couldn't stand it when I was growing up because it's like that suburban thing, you know, and you're like 14 years old and all you want to do is act out. And so I would take that Metro North train down to New York, though.
Oh, yeah.
When I was like 15. And, you know, you could, back then, you could do a lot worse things than you can nowadays. We could go to bars. And,
sure.
I mean, they didn't have any of the rules they have nowadays.
So it wasn't the creative arts that were driving you to the city? It was the party?
I would tell my parents that I was going to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So, yes, the arts right, were driving. Yeah. If my parents are listening.
Well, we're thrilled to have you in here. Yeah. We're massive Stranger Things fans, and we're also just massive fans of your body of work, which is just so much great stuff. And I think you've described yourself, or have been described, and I think you're the epitome of that guy for so long, who just is always, this guy's in it, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, and we have a sense that you've curated the things that you're in, and whether that's the truth or not, you just always end up in good stuff. And Stranger Things is just such a... no one could have figured this bizarre pop culture bank shot that took place.
Yes.
And that they went with, except for perhaps Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
Moderately known.
Yeah.
And it just took off. So when you got the script for the first time, I understand it blew you away. But did you think you were going to get it? You couldn't have had an idea it would be what it has become.
No.
Yeah.
The complete opposite, to be honest. I mean, the first thing is you get the script, and I thought it was a really good script. And so my first thought was there's no way they're going to choose me to be, like, the male adult lead in this. They'll get somebody who's a star. And so I kind of blew off the audition a little bit. I mean, I do what I do, but there was a relaxation in the audition where it was like, you know, those situations where you think, like, this will never happen, so I might as well just do what I want to do.
And that must help. That must help.
It does, because it makes you more relaxed.
Yeah.
You have no expectations. You're not.
Right.
You don't have a goal. You're just like doing what you do. And then I wound up getting it, and it was incredible. And then as we were shooting it, I remember around episode 4 or 5 having a bit of a breakdown and thinking, none of this works.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, because I remember, I mean, Hopper's a really messy guy in many ways, like everything from his body to, his personality.
Well, the very first, my impression of your character was like, this guy's a douchebag because
exactly.
She comes and says, my kid is missing. And he's like, he's out running around or whatever. I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
He's more complex than that, and really cares. But you're right. He kind of had that really messy attitude about him, but he's the character morph. So initially you thought that wasn't going to translate.
Yeah, and so like around episode, I think it was 5, though, we were doing a scene and I'm neurotic and occasionally I'll ask people like, what'd you think? And
right.
I went up to my hair person, this woman, Sarah, who's a lovely person, but I was like, what do you think? And she just turned to me and just shook her head and she was like, yeah, I don't think it's going to work.
Oh,
wow.
And I was like, what? You mean the whole thing?
Thanks for the confidence.
Oh,
Well, I understood where she's got. You know, you're in a bubble down there, and you just have these days where you're like, what we're doing is stupid. Nobody's going to like it. And then before the show came out, there was no advertisements.
Yeah. No.
No.
And
no.
And I couldn't get an interview like this on a popular radio show. Like, nobody wanted to talk to me about this show.
That was the beauty of it. I found out about it through word of mouth.
Exactly.
And right. So it started to catch. And it was that. Now, this actually speaks to, you were a child of the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people remember all of this, it's at once a tribute to the work of Stephen King, and it's this pop culture maelstrom of things that are all pulled together and
Spielberg,
right, yeah, to Spielberg, and shot in a way that all the things that we love, mm-hmm, but done in a great way, so there'd be no way to know it. But the fact that it did happen that way organically, I think, made it more firmly entrenched, and that's why we're rabid for season three.
You and the Netflix season one marketing department apparently had the same thought, because right, that's what they claimed was they. I don't know if that's just a way of getting out of spending any money on the show, but they claimed that was kind of their strategy, was to have people discover it. And I have to say, it is very gratifying. It was very gratifying to have it be something that wasn't hyped at all, and just to have people stumble across it on Netflix, and then the social media aspect of it. They just told their friends, and it was all over like Facebook and Twitter. Like, what is this?
Yeah.
And I think in this world where everything is so hyped, it's nice to have ownership and discover something that almost feels like a little pearl you found in an oyster, like a surprise, you know?
So let me ask you then, here's the conundrum now.
Uh-huh.
Now it is a thing that's
hyped. I know, now we're talking about it.
Right,
oh,
right.
God.
But where season two is always, everyone's like, well, okay, what season two kicked ass.
Yeah. I know.
And it was...
And guess what happens in season three?
Perhaps a bit.
We jump the shark.
You know, it's...
My character gets on water skis.
Nice.
Well, literally and one jumps of
the
top, okay.
And there's a great white shark in the lake.
All right.
Who knew?
Yeah.
In Hawkins
are you,
Lake.
Are you wearing a leather jacket?
I am.
Okay.
Surprisingly. No, honestly, I just finished, because they just sent me, because they like to send the finished episodes to everyone else before me.
Right.
But they just sent me all the episodes. I just finished them last night, actually. And it is so damn good.
Wow.
The trailer
it
alone.
It is so damn good. And you, like, the end is...
How does it end? What happens?
Okay, yeah. So here's what happens.
You made it off the chart.
Yeah. By the way, I would like to correct you on one little thing. Prior to this, the first season coming out, we totally would have had you on our show.
You're a liar.
No.
You are in some of our favorite things.
When the first trailer for Black Mass came out, and the dinner scene with you and Johnny Depp, and I'll just sort of leave it at that, because I know you wanted to hit on this, Steve.
Oh, no. Like, we're gonna go over all your stuff, because we're big fans. But yes, no, Casey's right. We were fans before Stranger Things. It just cements the adoration. But to that point, you go through these things. This has been your quantum leap.
You
were that kind of guy. You were on Broadway and you working that whole deal. When you went in to I know you had an issue with working with kids initially, right? Because kids can be a liability, right?
Initially,
because I find. You've got to get the right. I'm so quick to hate a kid in a thing. if he's, you know what I'm saying? If he's
I
annoying,
do know what you mean. I know exactly.
You got to get. You got to get a Haley Joel Osment. You got to get somebody who really gets these.
And
kids
we got like six of them.
Yeah.
I know. I know.
And so they never. The old thing is never work with animals or kids.
Yeah. But you and I are the same age, right? So when I look at the
sketch. Are you 75?
Born in 75.
No. Yeah, 1975. Yeah. No.
So you were born on my brother's birthday in 1975.
Oh, wow.
I saw that. I turned 44 on the 4th of July. So
Wait. Yeah. I was born on your brother.
My brother was born in 73.
Oh, 73. I was like, two months apart? Brother, how did that happen? Something with test tubes and cloning or something.
It's right out of Stranger Things.
Yeah, exactly.
So the upside down.
You and I and Nick, actually, as a matter of fact, we're all contemporaries. So we grew up with the same movies. So
There are movies that came out in the 80s that still work today that have kids in them because they were so good. The Goonies is one.
Yes.
Stand By Me is another
yes.
one. Sandlot is another one that came a little bit later on.
Okay.
And so I liken
E.T.
E.T. Yeah. As a matter of fact, E.T.
Yeah. Drew Barrymore, like a little tiny Drew Barrymore. Amazing. Yeah.
Right. So, and we had the creator of The Sandlot in here a couple of years ago, and he actually, I think they had a whole other cast of kids, and he was like, you know what, I need to get older kids to play younger because they weren't doing it right. And
yeah, interesting. And yeah. So, I mean, our kids are kind of all over the map. I think when we started, I think Millie was the youngest, and I think she was 11 years old, and then I think Caleb was the oldest, and I think he was maybe 14. So they do span a little bit, but in general, they are kind of aging with the show. Like right. Millie in particular is, you know, she started out, she was 11 years old, and now she's what, like 14 or something.
She's a young woman now. It's a little weird to see, but it's natural.
Well, it's weird for you. It's just weird for Hopper, too. Yeah, it's like a nightmare.
I love that you, and to Preston's point about the character, this character, and I think some of I like complex, I like villains where you can sort of see why they are what they are, and they're not just, you know, mustache twisting. And I like heroes that sometimes get pissed off and have luggage, and that's what how Hopper came into the to the deal. You know, the whole paternal aspect of him was not revealed, and it becomes revealed in an organic way. How much of your input helped create that genesis for Hopper?
I mean, they had an amazing character already created when I came in, but they also are very collaborative. So, you know, I have ideas and I understand men that are broken and disappointed in life and other people are disappointed in. So I had some insight into that.
Right.
And so, you know, as we were developing him in the first season, and one of the fun things was as we developed him in the first season and as we thought, you know, we were all sort of neurotic. We thought, well, this isn't going to have much of a life after this season. But we would sit around on set and just have fantasies about, like, you know, what would be amazing? Like,
right.
If we could run this thing. Like, what could be cool? And I think that some of those discussions, especially in season one, you know, one of the fun things was, like, we really loved the character of Hopper, and we also really loved this character of 11. And we were like, you know, there's clearly, like, he had a daughter who died, and so he has a lot of trauma around that. And she had a papa who was manipulative and who used her.
Right.
And so wouldn't it be great for these two characters to try to heal their trauma together and do it in a very chaotic way where they, you know, they don't know
season
what they're
two?
Doing. Yeah,
season
so that
two was
led
our process.
Season two.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there's stuff that we're even responding to going into season three. Yeah,
no.
David, I loved you on Newsroom, and I love you in Stranger Things, and they're very different roles.
Very different.
And the writing on, which is Aaron Sorkin's show, and on the Newsroom, is it's so fast-paced, and so a lot of your character is built on the fast-paced nature of the entire show and how quickly the dialogue is delivered, whereas on Stranger Things, it's the spaces between the notes, right? Mm. It's a lot more drawn out, and you can be a much more subtle actor. Do you have a preference? Does it matter to you? Or do you just like the work when the work is good?
No, I mean, I do feel like with the Newsroom stuff, like, I feel like the gestalt, like the larger piece, is very good. But as a component in it, you don't have a lot of freedom to do. You don't have a lot of ownership in a weird way. And so with Stranger Things, there's a lot more ownership. I mean, you get to explore a lot more behavior. A lot of times, like, Sorkin's stuff and a Newsroom is very much about the point you're making, you know, on the page. Whereas with Stranger Things, you may say something and mean something entirely different, or you may say something and then behave entirely different.
And there are these pauses and these drawn out things, especially with your character.
I love that. I love the way your character is like, you take a lot of time.
But it's
what's
compelling.
Up with you? Why?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's you get drawn in as a result.
Yeah. 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 No, I mean, I that's my whole thing with acting has always been that, you know, a lot of it,
human behavior is always very complex, and sometimes, a lot of times, I think people say something that, and then they behave entirely differently. And that's sort of how I've seen the world since I was a kid, is I've always been confused by human beings, because they would say things like, I love you. And you'd be like, I don't think you do. I think you want me to stay, or you want, I don't know what you want, but you don't just love me. So that's always the complicated thing that I want to explore with human beings. And I think that the great thing about the Duffers are they really love actors. They really love, you know, what we bring to it, and they really want, you know, so they'll have something in their mind that's very specific, and then we'll come in and mess it up, and they'll be like, this is even better than what we, and that sort of collaboration is what you're always looking for.
You mentioned taking a lot of time. Netflix took a long time to get this next season back.
Okay.
I was curious what you, all right, how you feel about that as an actor.
Listen, here's the problem, all right? Uh-huh. It's not a problem. It's a problem with you guys. I swear, it is a problem with the world, okay? Because we have, I'm going to throw down here. Because we have trained you. We give you 9 hours of content.
Yeah.
And you binge it all in a day.
No, I learned.
And it's like, give us time. Take your time. Once every 2 months is when you should be watching an episode.
It's crack.
Look,
it's crack.
I know. For me too. I mean, sorry.
No. And as soon as it's over, you're like, when's the next one coming? After the first day it comes out, you watch the whole season, you want to know when there's more.
And you'll see, you'll see as you watch this season. I mean, the problem is, I agree. I wish we could bring them out to you every couple months, you know? But the problem is, and especially when you watch this season, if you really just watch each episode and you see the camera work, the story work, the production design, every single one of them is an hour-long movie.
That's been true of the whole series.
Eight of them.
Yeah.
But eight movies in a year and a half is pretty good, compared to
Well, let me ask you, going to your film work, which we should love, and Casey brought up Black Mass, and and you know, you've worked on the other side of the table from Johnny Depp, as menacing a Whitey Bulger as you could possibly imagine. And I was reading an interview with you where you say the performance, you know, it really works like when you legitimately, if you're supposed to hate somebody, if you actually sort of legitimately hate the person in that scene, and that you can tell when someone's going, I'm going to pretend I hate you. So when Johnny Depp is looking across at you and he's delivering the secret recipe sequence, are you kind of getting unnerved by that?
I mean, there's very personal work going on. I'm terrified of Johnny Depp. I mean, who isn't? But, it's a funny thing. You meet people and you work with them almost immediately. That was Johnny and me. We just met that day and we just had that scene. But
no, that was your first scene within that day?
Yeah, and that was actually my first scene in the movie.
Wow.
You sit down with a person. And so what I try to do is, just get very personal with them early on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You try to really see what you get from this human being, and then what you can use. It's almost like you're there with another chef, and you guys just have ingredients spilled out, and you're like, okay, what am I going to use from you? You have this set of ingredients, I have this set of ingredients. What can we? And I mean, I do feel like the thing about acting is that when it's, and look, I do it sometimes, and sometimes I get scared of doing it, but when you bleed, other people feel it more, I think.
You know,
Ernest Hemingway has this great quote where he's like, writing is easy. You just sit at the typewriter and bleed. It's true. When you actually are in the room, if you actually are hurt by someone, it registers as differently, viscerally, than if you're just sort of pretending.
Right. And I think in that scene you had soy sauce and garlic.
Oh, man. Found out. I spilled the secret.
Can I ask you a question? Because
real quick, I just want to reset. Yeah. David Harbour, if you're just tuning in, Stranger Things.
With that particular movie, you've been an actor for a long time. That's what you majored in college. You get into it because you love it. I assume that you didn't get into what you're doing now to receive awards and all that sort of stuff. However, with that movie, I felt like
Johnny Depp should have at least been nominated for Best Actor in every single award show, and he wasn't.
Yeah, and I mean, that stuff's so, all political, you know.
Okay. You can see there are signs, and it's always been the case. For example, I always point to the fact that Paul Newman should have won for The Verdict, and they gave it to him for The Color of Money.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah,
and it's like, we screwed up, so here you go. So that's.
I think it's Pacino, too, right?
Like yeah.
He was nominated, The Godfather, Godfather 2, like all these movies, and then they give it to him for A Scent of a Woman, which is like, okay. Yeah. But like, it's those no Dog Day Afternoon. Like, right. Come on. Like,
no, you're right.
You're
Attica! Attica!
Yeah. It was just on the other night. It holds up. It's still great.
David, I wanted to go back to the kids on the set on Stranger Things. You're watching these kids grow up. They're great actors, yet they are they're going up into this world of a career. I'm wondering if you're just letting them do that, or do you occasionally have a little bit of advice you try to, by osmosis, kind of give to them?
Are you a parent?
I am, yeah, I have three. Yeah.
One of his sons is right behind us.
Yeah,
oh, actually. Really?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you listen to your dad?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Because you're in the room. Yeah, I know. No, of course, like, whatever. I mean, I actually don't have kids, so... I have six, you know, or seven, if you include Joe Keery, like little kids who I like adore and love. And of course, I'm protective over them and I want them. And I mean, it is a hard road, and especially nowadays with all the interaction with fans and stuff like that. And the fact that, you know, there's a fickle light of fame and of people that like you. I mean, I look at professional sports players and like, you know, you have a bad season and you got people in the stands going like, you're a bum.
Yeah.
And we have the same thing
because of social media.
Exactly.
You're just eviscerated.
That's the thing. Yeah. And I feel for these kids to be thrust in the limelight so quickly and to be, you know, they are beloved. And look, I hope that they never have a day of not being beloved, but I will say, I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's possible for any human being. I mean, we go up and down, the world loves you, they hate you. I mean, it's just the nature of fortune, right? It's like a fickle wheel. It just spins. It just spins.
But you feel the hate more than you do the love for some
absolutely.
Reason.
Absolutely. It's so true, right? Yeah. I mean,
you have to learn though, you know, that my dad years ago, just, he would say, always consider the source. Always consider the source. And when you do that, it helps mitigate and tamp down that stuff. But it's hard, though, because you get into this because you, as you said, you go to the hairdresser, how am I doing? And you don't want to hear you're not, it doesn't look like it's going well.
And you think that, I think because, you know, we're on TV or whatever it is, like, I think it too. I mean, I've written things about people on Twitter, like celebrities and stuff. You think that like those people are immune because they are so like, and then you're just like, no, like I'm just a human being like anybody else. So if you come up and say like, you're the worst, like, it hurts. I mean,
I am the worst. You know,
but it is true. Like the amount you can just rack up, love, and it just, you know, scroll through that.
Or
but the minute somebody goes like, I don't know.
Like your hairdresser.
What? Yeah, exactly.
Well, like I tweeted out OJ's on Twitter now, and I tweeted out, I did bring up the double murder thing, but I said he looked good. So I tried to.
Okay.
I still, even with OJ, I tried to do that.
Going back to Stranger Things, I love the concept of the town of Hawkins. It's very Stephen King-esque, like Castle Rock, where there's just this area that's concentrated. Weird things are happening all the time. You've also got this cast that's growing up. This could go on for quite a while. You know, and only you and the guy, the people that are writing this show know whether it's a definitive end at the end of season three. We don't know. But this train could keep riding for a while, couldn't it? Yeah.
All right.
Well.
All right. Like a shaky witness, I'm going to reach for the glass.
We know
take a sip of coffee.
We know you got to run. Real quick question about Black Widow. You are indeed filming that?
No, yes. I mean, I don't know if I'm filming right now.
Right.
But yes.
Okay.
We are shooting that movie. Yes.
I just wanted to make sure because, you know, reports and IMDb. And
No. There's a lot of misinformation on that as well. But I will say that Kate Shortland is directing this movie, Black Widow, which I am in, and it is incredible.
Awesome. We love the subject matter,
Scarlett.
We're thrilled you're in it. We're huge fans of what you do, and it's just very intriguing. So
I think it's really going to be a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, and these Marvel guys are like, you know, they're just the best in the business. Like Kevin Feige, and these guys are just so good at what they do. So you really feel it on set too. It's like this real, you know, these guys are just really good at telling stories.
They take something that could be lighter than air and really just evaporate, and they make it something that has gravitas to it, which is amazing.
Exactly.
Stranger Things Season 3 is on Netflix. Dude, I'm really happy that you're like a super nice guy.
Oh, thanks.
That's always nice to find out.
Nice to talk to you guys.
Thank you. We appreciate
it. Enjoy the season. It's really, and I don't say this, I mean, I'm standing behind the hype. It's like, it's going to take
love it.
All right, let's hear it for David Harbour.
Thank you.
Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Wait, turn up the sound.
93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Our next guest is going to be performing at the Miriam Theater. You know him from movies and streaming shows. And, of course, one of the best podcasts in the world. And we're happy he's back in town. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Maron is here. Hey, Mark.
Am I on? Is it on?
It is on.
And comedy. They know me from comedy.
They do. That's why you're at the Miriam tonight, man. We were checking our records, and I think the last time you came by for a visit was in our studio in 2012. I know.
Look at us all turning old. Look at a bunch of old men now.
That's why you got to shave your head.
I do? Yeah, is it time?
What happens is it at least removes that visual cue, you know? So
then you're just the ageless bald man.
Exactly.
How old is that Buddha?
Yeah. Exactly. You look good, Buddha.
Yeah. I don't know when it happened to me, though. Like, I'm just starting to notice it now. For years,
You look good, though. No, you look good. I'm going to say I'm going to put you in the age-defying category, and I think because you have an iconic mustache.
Oh, is that what's happening?
I think that's it, yeah.
I finally have an iconic mustache.
Yes, I think you, because you can be drawn with your facial hair. You're in one of the rare class of people, celebrities, who can be defined by their facial hair. In a sketch.
I used to do the sort of a soul patch thing.
Now I got
Now I got a full beard going. But I think I just noticed it a couple weeks ago. I think I swept one, maybe last, might have been last Wednesday. I woke up old. I feel like everybody hits that moment where you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, it happened. I don't know when it happened.
Do you know what it is? It's like sometimes. Why does that jiggle now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is.
Are you jumping up and down in front of the mirror? Look at me. It's all going. Uh-huh. It's all jiggling.
That's it. Something hurts that didn't hurt before.
That's happening.
And the time to recover takes longer.
Yeah, if you ever do recover, it's the living with the hurting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I guess my toes are like that now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel all right. I think so.
You're in good shape. You've remained in good shape for quite a while.
It takes work, man.
You know, I was watching, Mark, a documentary just over last weekend on Sam Kinison, and you, go back to that. I think of all the ways, knowing you were going to be in. Yeah. The bizarre, you know, fluidity of life, and there, you know, you're in that prominently. And
I was,
you're mentioned many times, in the beginning. So the
where's this on?
Yeah, it's all right. Or something. So, yeah. but long story short, you know, if you look at your career the way it's firing now, it's got to be wild to be where you were back then, to gone through all you've gone through.
Yeah.
You know, the book is out. We are waiting for the punch.
Yeah.
The shows, the podcast, interviewing the president, all of this stuff. Do you have time to take a breath and absorb it all, or do you just keep going, you know?
I'm trying. I'm experimenting with experiencing peace of mind. And happiness, because I'm told it's beneficial to us, and that's what we're working towards.
Yeah.
It does get to a point where, you know, because things turned around for me, not later in life. I'm not like, you know, 70, but I mean, my success came in my 40s.
Yeah.
And it does make a difference. I know people are like, they say, like, does success really make a difference? Yes.
Yeah.
It does make a difference in terms of because you spend so much time committed to something. Like with comedy, I mean, that's all I wanted to do, and that's all that I really am. And when you do that, after a certain point, there's no plan B. You know, you get 20 years into something, and all of a sudden you're like, well, I could always...
Oh, man.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's nothing there. What the last job I had was a really legit job was I was a grill cook. You know, in college, I think, before I committed to comedy. Or worked at a coffee shop somewhere. So it's not lost on me that it's sort of amazing that I've pulled it out in the second half here. But I am trying to appreciate it. Yeah, I'm trying to do nice things. I'll go ahead and fly first class, if that's okay. And,
yes,
and
the other... treat yourself, because you don't want to be that guy who shuns all...
No, I don't, but I also have that brain of a comic where it's sort of like, I don't know when this money's going to go away. Like, I don't know when the work's going to dry up. I don't know if I'm going to get that club date.
Right.
And I still have that survival kind of mindset.
Do you know what was very, very telling was, and I always reference it because I think it's probably as true a thing as you'll ever see, is Joan Rivers in her documentary right at the end there. She had her book. Her schedule, and there was open space, even at her career, with the way everything was going. I got to fill that in. It's a day open. I got it. Yeah, right? So
it never leaves you, does it? It doesn't. No, but I'm always pretty busy. I'm like doing the comedy, and then I do the TV show now, the Glow Show. We got one more season of that.
It's a great show.
Yeah, it's a fun show. And then, the podcast.
And Joker.
I got a hot, like a tight 40 seconds of Joker.
Hey, you got more than Brian Callen.
Yeah. Callen's like, is that him?
Yeah. You got more than Gary Goldman.
No, Gary Goldman was kind of featured, but he's doing his act.
Yeah. I love him, by the way.
Well, it was funny because I did there's this whole thing where, I did it was a longer scene with me and De Niro. It wasn't the whole movie, but we did a walk and talk thing heading up to the dressing room where we enter, and that's the scene in the Joker. But there's a whole other thing where I'm like, "How you doing? What's going on? Let's not do this."
They excise that.
Well, because I asked the guy, Todd Phillips, I said, before I saw the movie, I said, am I in it? Did I make the cut? He goes, well, we cut the walk and talk, and I was like, all right. He goes, we had to, because he said, there's not a scene in that movie that doesn't involve the Joker.
Yeah.
So it's completely from his point of view, or he's always in every frame. So anything that didn't involve him, that he wasn't in, they took out. And it made sense to me.
Okay.
And he said that one, like that scene, that walk and talk, had nothing to do with Joker. So they really...
I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, it made sense.
You had a funny observation on Colbert you were talking about.
I get this opportunity.
It's De Niro. It's freaking De Niro.
Well, people I'm fairly critical of Marvel movies. I get, I've gotten a lot of pushback.
Well, as you can see, we're fans.
Yeah, but I get a lot of pushback from the grown male nerd community.
Yes.
It gets very mad at me. But when they found out I did Joker, they're like, "No, you're a hypocrite." And they're very excited that they think they won something.
Yeah.
But
we got him. We converted him.
No, they were like, this guy's opinion means nothing.
Right.
Yeah, he's a sellout. But the bottom line is, you get a call from your agent. And they're like, "You want to do a scene with Joaquin and De Niro?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's in a comic movie." I'm like, "Nah, I didn't." Yes, of course. Of course, I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Right.
So, all right. Can I ask you what your stance is on these comic movies? Because are you up there with like how Bill Maher feels about them?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Bill has a tone.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's delicate.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm within that tone.
Okay.
I think you could put me in the mildly condescending.
Right.
I have a problem with it culturally because I do believe that there's a fanatical sort of commitment to them. I do believe that because of their popularity, they do push out other entertainment options. And I do believe that, I don't know that as a grown-up, I've earned this age that I'm at. I don't want to feel sort of a... bullied to go see children's movies.
Okay. I understand that. I understand that.
Because people who like those movies, even if they're grown-ups, they're sort of like, come on. They're almost like missionaries. There's just like a bunch of Disney stooges, who are trying to tell you it's like, this is their life. Well,
right. I've been a fan throughout all my life, and so it attaches to pivotal moments of my childhood.
That. Sure.
So, but I understand it's the same way vegans try to push the whole thing. And I
think
get,
one is more healthy. Like, I don't think you're getting any health benefits
from
the Avengers movies. Well, Batman's like the DC Marvel's different. Like, and I've used that joke. Like, when people are like, oh, you're doing a comic, it's a DC movie.
It's a little darker, a little more grown up.
But I
do understand it because I love the movies. Yeah. I'm not a comic book guy. I didn't read the comic books growing up, so I don't have this, like, long vested interest in, like, oh my God, it's finally happening.
I think it's a belief system.
Right, right.
I mean, these guys have been reading. Go ahead.
But no. My wife doesn't watch any of them. And I tried to have this.
I think that's something a lot of men say.
But I tried to have this argument with her. I'm like, no, it's really, really great cinema. But now, like, hearing you talk, I'm like, okay, you know what? Listen, you're allowed to not be into them. And I need to just kind of, like, drop it right then and there. Like, okay.
Wow. I think if this feels like some sort of peace talk.
We've made a breakthrough.
You're just going to drop it right there. That's interesting. You sure you don't want to get online with an army of your peers?
No.
And talk about
it. It's too much work, man. Wow.
That's an argument nobody's ever going to win. So that's what gets me is, why have that argument? Maybe just for the catharsis of having the argument itself?
No, I tell you why. And my producer, Brendan, has explained this to me, is because, you know, this is a group of people that were sort of marginalized in a way. The nerds were always sort of the brunt of the joke.
Yeah.
And now they own culture.
Mm-hmm. They do.
And they're not going to let it go. So anybody that's going to start pushing at it, they're like, no! And it's always shrill and awkward, and they're having feelings.
You look at, like, Scorsese just caught.
I think that was a reasonable assessment.
Yeah, and he's just saying, listen, if Martin, you certainly have to entertain Martin Scorsese's view on things. It at its basic core, it's fun. Yeah. That's what it is. It's a diversion. It's a hearkening back nostalgically for childhood.
Right.
But it's not I don't want to leave childhood. But I know what you're saying.
I get bored. Yeah. I'm bored. Right. You know what I mean? The stories are simple, and I get it. Like, I know they're like, you ought to see the one with Hugh Jackman. And
right.
What's that
Logan.
One?
Logan.
Oh, you want to start, because I'm going to try to watch some.
Yeah.
Just for.
Watch Logan.
I think I'll start at the beginning. I've seen Iron Man.
Yeah.
I think that maybe Iron Man. I don't know.
It's okay.
It's
really okay.
Again. Yeah, it's funny because we deal with, obviously, the station plays music and a song will come up, and it's the ultimate subjective thing. How do you respond to music?
But that sucks.
People speak in concrete. This is great. Yeah. No,
it's the same with comedy. It's the same with everything. There's these things are subjective. You don't have to like them.
Right.
But I mean, my problem is with those movies. Generally, I really do get bored. I mean, if you're not thrilled by dudes flying around and throwing buildings and rocks and cars and things, you know, I don't know. It just it was never my thing. And I read some comics, but even the comics I read when I was a kid were not those. I read, like, Swamp Thing,
then
I went into the Gaiman stuff, Hellblazer and Sandman. I liked,
that's good stuff.
I liked a lot of the underground world of comics. I like Daniel Clowes. I like that guy, what's his name, Burns, who does the eight ball comics.
So what do you like? Do you like horror movies and stuff?
Nope.
Or you're not into that stuff?
No, like I have no movies? Patience. No patience for that. I just killed the guy. I don't know what... That feeling of suspense is not one of my favorite entertainment feelings.
What in the pop culture realm? What's your go to genre? What do you most find yourself being drawn to when you go to a movie? If you have,
that's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. I've been watching Succession.
I just started watching that.
I love it.
Everyone raves about it. Yeah.
Well, the way they talk to each other is amazing.
Because
it's not real, but it's like there's such the emotional weirdness of the whole thing is great. I just rewatched the entire Breaking Bad.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
Well, you did?
Yeah, well, Preston and I did, a year or so ago, and now I've watched the last few episodes again because of the Netflix movie that's coming out with Jesse.
I went to the premiere.
Oh, how was it?
It's.
Can we ask?
Whose phone is going?
It's yours, I think.
Is it mine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Dude, that happened at the end of Hamilton on Tuesday night.
Hey, time to wake up.
Yeah.
Is it your alarm?
It's 7:30. Oh, my God.
I almost didn't wake up because I thought I said it, and I didn't say it, but I woke up anyways.
Yeah.
The movie's good. It's good. It's almost like... I think he made it just because he's like, these guys were so great. Let's just make one more movie.
Okay.
I can
one
see
more
that.
Thing with this.
I'm fine with that.
The premiere was great. I don't usually go to a lot of those, but because I'm on a Netflix show and I've done specials and I've been on a few of their shows, they invite me. And I was like, I'm going to go to this one.
Yeah.
So I wore this shirt, the one you kind of...
I love he's wearing a denim shirt and I really like it.
Thank you. I mean, I know it's stiff. I know it's new because I knew the way you said it. It's like, you're like, wow, where'd you get that shirt? It was a compliment, but they were sort of like, a little new. It's a little... Yeah. You know, maybe you might want to break that in.
Right. Is it itchy?
Where'd you get that brand new denim shirt?
It had an edge to it. Yeah.
You just got that, didn't you? You know, it wasn't a full-on compliment. Yeah. Like, that's a denim shirt you got.
That thing is really denim, isn't it?
In the world of denim, that's passive-aggressive.
We got to work on him.
That's hilarious.
But the movie...
Yeah.
So I'm still like crazy because I still get kind of starstruck and it's just kind of because I walk the carpet. I don't have to, but I'm not in the movie. But then you get that picture. It's like also at the premiere, I was there, you know.
But I'm sure Netflix encourages you if you can because you're a Netflix.
Yeah, and I wore this denim shirt. That was the first. There it is. There's the picture you got. See, that's the denim shirt. On its first appearance publicly.
Same pants, too.
Is the same pants. Uh-huh. I got four things, dude. I got two pairs of pants I wear at any one time and three shirts.
You're stylish.
I love the Us magazine where they say he really loves his, and it's like five pictures of you in the denim shirt.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And that's it. Yeah. Well, I'm breaking it in. But I get starstruck, and also there's a weird mixture of, like, do people know who I am, and can I approach them? There's some of them I do. Like, I saw Ed Begley there. Ed Begley gave me a big hug.
And that's not Ed Begley's great.
That's cool. Not nothing, huh?
Yeah. Yep.
And then I saw Jonathan Banks,
who
plays Mike.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if he does know me, but I walk up to him, because I grew up in Albuquerque, and they shot the whole thing in Albuquerque.
Oh, no.
And my buddy from second grade lives in an apartment building that Mike just got a place in, because they shoot out there all the time with Saul and everything else, and they've become friends. So I walk up to Mike. I'm like, my buddy Dave's your buddy. And he's like, oh, yeah? And I'm like, and then I realize, like, he doesn't have no idea who I am. Like, I don't think he does.
I don't think he gets starstruck.
Oh, my God.
No.
Jonathan Banks. He does not impress me as the type he's pretty nonplussed.
But yeah, definitely. But the thing that got me, like, Cranston was nice to me because he's been on the show. And I saw Jesse Plemons, who I've not talked to. But he's, he was, you know, he knew I was and we talked. I listened to me. I'm like, some of them know me. Some of the celebrities know me.
we get the same way.
I know, right?
Hey, we know David Faustino.
Yeah, he came here? Yeah. Was he here?
He was here.
Wow.
Kathy doesn't remember.
I don't remember.
Yeah. So I'm at the premiere. And
so many things.
From behind me. Over at the, and that people are sort of talking before the movie started, and I hear Hank's voice. You know, Hank from the cop in Breaking Bad. And I didn't even know the actor's name, but I'm like, there's Hank! I want to talk to Hank! Like, when I interviewed Cranston, I swear to God, when I did that, I was so immersed in the show, it was years ago, that I could not separate him from Walter White.
Yeah.
And, like, I kind of, throughout the entire interview with him, I'm like, I think I need to talk to Walter. So there's certain characters that really impress, like, Hank's such a great, that guy's great. What's his name?
Dean something or other.
Norris.
Yep.
Yeah. Great
character.
I felt myself excited. Like, there's Hank, and he sounds just like Hank talking to other people. But yeah, Obama is no Hank.
Right.
But exciting.
Yeah. Speaking of Obama, the podcast WTF with Marc Maron. 10-year anniversary, man. You've really really made that a mainstay, and it's, you do it right. You kind of do what we like to do as a radio show. We just have conversations and we dive into whatever comes up. You have a basic idea of what you want to talk about, but
you do your homework.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Poke around a little bit. Sometimes I miss things, but you got to get used to people saying, like, why didn't you ask him about it?
Because,
you should have told it.
Yeah, no.
No, it's got to be on your terms, but you know, so initially you're interviewing skills, your chops, where they developed on like Air America, or had you, you know, did you have a good rapport, a conversation ability? Because you, again, I told you earlier before we went on that when we first started, our interviews kind of sounded like interrogations as opposed to just conversations. And when did this switch flip
that's
for you?
I think that's a style initially.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get these moments. It was like the audio equivalent of clickbait.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. You're exactly right.
You kind of want to, like, you know, let's get them on this one. Like, I don't do morning radio as much as I used to because I don't know what I'm walking into. I know you guys.
Right.
But even phoners, you want to be on a phone with a bunch of monsters who are just looking to tear you down.
Yeah.
And you've got no way to defend yourself because you're on a phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but my style really was more about, you know, inviting people I knew over to talk about my problems.
Yeah.
So having celebrities over to talk about my problems and maybe find some midway.
It's a it's a disarming entree into a good conversation.
Yeah, I was in trouble. I was bitter. I was cynical. I had people I had to apologize to. But yeah, wow. So it sort of evolved like that.
From like a 12-step almost.
Yeah, like, almost like I need to make an amends or like, yeah, or like do you like me? Or like, I'm not comfortable with you. But it was always very personal, and it just kind of evolved from there.
So your most listened to podcast would be, I guess, the specific episodes, the Louis C.K., right?
The two episodes with
Todd Glass.
I don't know which ones are the most. I'd have to ask Brendan. But, you know, the Obama one is always evergreen. Like right now, like the most recent 6 months are always free on WTFpod.com or Stitcher. It has the archive. And then after, if you want to go back before 6 months, you got to go Stitcher Premium kind of deal. But yeah, I don't know how many people listen to Louis. There was a two doubleheader with Louis. That was a big podcast. I don't know how many people are going back to that.
I thought your you know, it was as sincere a sentiment as I've ever heard relayed, you know, about a friend of yours who's done something that is not right.
Yeah.
But you know, again, I think this is a muscle that you've developed over years of just living your life and kind of laying it all out bare. But just, and I thought it was so genuine. And it's, all of us have people in our lives like, that's them, and I take them for what I take them for what they are, and I you know, I know them on other levels that you don't, and this is how it is.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't talk anymore.
Yeah. Really? Has it gone asunder because of that?
No, I don't know. Asunder. It's just like, you know, I don't know who, you know, what his wife is now. I mean, after that stuff went down, you know, I addressed it honestly, and I thought it was reasonable.
It was. It was more than reasonable.
And you know, he's got to go through what he's going to go through.
Yeah. 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 Interesting.
I want to ask you kind of a nerdy radio question because with you and Brendan, and when you're at the red carpet, do you see Dean Norris and say, man, I want him on the show? Or, you know, if you're in Philadelphia at the Merriam and you meet somebody that would be good for the podcast,
I've gotten a little more respectful in that way.
What about with De Niro?
Well, I mean, he doesn't do that kind of stuff. I talked to De Niro briefly, you know, and not briefly. I mean, he's a nice guy. He was present. The day I started shooting The Joker was the day they found a bomb at his building.
Oh.
And, you know, but he was handling pretty well. Well, no, but like, you know, he looked at the other people that got bombs. He was like, I'm in pretty good company. You know, it's like Hillary and, you know, a few other. But he was dealing with that. But he's, you know, if you really think about him, he never even appeared on Carson, really. Hmm. Like, he's just not that guy. He's not a big talker. Like, I've run into Brad Pitt many times. For some reason, Brad Pitt's a fan of my TV show, of Marin. Like, and he's watched it several times.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen him at two different events, and he's like, oh, man, that your show, I'm watching it again. I'm like, really? And I've asked him, I said, well, if you ever want to come on, he goes, I'm not a good interview. I'm really not a good interview.
I don't know if De Niro would be.
That. No, that's the thing. So I don't ask that. But I've also become a little more aware of, like, not asking people in public, like, you know, at some point, you know, I'm not the guy who's like, hey, man, you know, can you do my show? Can you do my podcast? Like, I'm sort of in the world now. So I have to, you know, I'm acting, I'm doing things. I'm not saying I'm a celebrity, but you don't want to pester people because I know how that feels. What, of course, they're going to say, of course. You know, they're going to say, yeah, I'd love to. And then what are you going to do? How are you going to follow up?
Right,
and then,
then
eventually you talk to a booker or a publicist, and they're like, he's not doing anything now.
Right. Yeah.
Especially not you.
It's just, like, when they go out of their way to say, especially not you, that's what hurts.
Well, they don't say that. But, I try to do it through proper channels unless it feels right.
Well, thanks for coming in this morning because I booked this interview. And we were going to do a phoner with you, and you decided to come in, which is cool. And to see you happy and chipper and upbeat is good. I know you've been dealing with nicotine withdrawal, and I wanted to ask you how that's going.
It's all right, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think I'm coming through it. I think I'm at, like, 7 weeks.
Oh,
and I wasn't even smoking, man. I was doing those lozenges.
That was the deal, huh?
I loved them.
Did you ever flirt with the vaping thing?
No. Okay. No, I knew right away that there had to be something wrong with
something's going
to
be an issue.
Well, right. Yeah, what's in it? How are they making that? Who's in charge?
That's the question. Yeah, isn't it?
I want to know if it's a kind of a well-known, you know, historical cigarette company making me sick. You know, these vapes, it's like, where's the goo coming from? What are you putting in there?
Where's your goo coming from?
If it's not Philip Morris or R.J. Reynolds, I don't want anything to do with that.
Chinese goo. Yeah.
So you Chinese goo? What is that? How is that not going to be bad?
Well, why'd you start trying these lozenges? Who turned you on to that, or where'd you get the idea to do that?
Well, I've been wrestling with nicotine my whole life, but okay. I haven't really smoked a cigarette in over a decade. So there was a period there. What happens with me is I got off the smokes. I think I had one cigarette during a Keith Richards interview, but I knew I was on the lozenges, and because he made me smoke with him.
All right.
Keith Richards. And he's got a bit of charm when it comes to getting people to do things that are bad for you.
So we've heard,
He's done that to an entire generation, several. But I do the gum. It took me years to sort of quit, but then I kind of leveled off on lozenges. I was on gum for a while, but they're not good for your jaw. And then someone, Tom Rhodes, another comic.
Yeah,
he turned me on to Walgreens, cinnamon, 4-milligram lozenges.
So okay. Cinnamon, okay. See, I was always the mint lozenge guy.
I don't do the mint. I don't mind them in a pinch. I'll do them. You know, when you're an addict, you'll do anything. What do you got? Yeah, the mini ones are too much for me. The little ones dissolve too quickly.
So were you in effect like chain sucking?
Sure, man. Are you kidding? I loved it. I looked forward to them like cigarettes. So... But what happens to me is I'll get off everything like I am now, and then I'll decide, like, I think I can have a cigar.
Yeah.
And then I'll have a cigar, and then within 2 weeks, I'm having 2-3 cigars a day.
Yeah.
And I feel like my mouth is rotting. So then I got to get back on the lozenges to get off the cigars, and then I'm locked on those.
So you got to look at me because I'm the only one who is currently addicted to nicotine, and I 130% know exactly what you're talking about.
What are you on? Yeah. Just
the
mints?
No. Now I'm on...
Oh, you're dipping? Yeah, the thing is, like, with that, I've done that.
But but I'm not smoking.
But I'm not. I get it. But
my lungs are okay, Mark.
I get it. I mean, there was a period I was getting imported snus from, like, Norway or Sweden. God. Like, someone got me involved with snus.
Yeah.
I think Swedish, right? Yeah. Originally. Yeah. But there's a whole catalog of, there's 100 different snuses from Sweden, and they say, like, it doesn't cause cancer, which is ridiculous.
Spitting.
But I was ordering this stuff that was so strong.
Yeah.
Like, it was like heroin. Like, you know, it's just a packet of snus, and I'd put it in, and I'd be like, oh, man, I got to sit down. But, like, in my mind, as a sober guy, I'm like, but I'm not doing anything bad.
Right.
Sober too, guy?
I'm sober. Sober 7.5 years, and I was actually nicotine-free when I got sober.
Yeah.
And then about 3 months into my sobriety, I'm like, I need something. I got this gigantic hole that I need to fill, and I'm going to fill it with nicotine and caffeine, and that's kind of where I'm at now.
My brother, who had never smoked in his life, when he became sober, he started smoking.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been through so much. I got 20 years sober, so I've been through a lot of different options.
Yeah.
With the...
But I'm looking at you. You're not even drinking coffee.
You got food. Nicotine, you got sex. Yeah, and those are my, you know, if I can move those around, go through a rotation.
Yeah.
Like, the one thing I never do, thank God, is gamble. Yeah, I never got that sickness.
Yeah.
I do not like losing money. I've never had an experience with gambling that I won so much money that I felt so great that I got to spend my life trying to do
that's
that.
That's funny. I get nervous while gambling. There's no rush
high. That is the rush. The nerves, that is the rush.
Yeah, but
it doesn't work for you.
Mark,
have you ever seen because I've seen a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
The first time we went to Vegas, I saw that
sickness?
Switch flip.
Oh, man.
And I literally had to take his ATM card
because
he was going to go hard.
Really?
Yeah. And I said, dude, you need to put this in check now because he would have tapped out everything. It was crazy.
I think the most I lost was $800 in an evening.
Wow.
And I'm still mad at the hotel.
Of course.
I tapped out at like 40.
Yeah, it still hurts me.
Well, that's why casino ATMs put out in $100 bills.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, they got you.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
And I'm a bad poker player, too.
I want to, real quick, Robert's been on hold for like 25 minutes. And I would, if I cut him off, I'd be like a jerk.
No, De Niro.
Hey, what's up? You had a question for Mark Maron.
Hey, Mark. Listen to every single episode. Really love the podcast.
Thanks.
What is taking so long with the garage renovation, and what are you doing in there?
Okay. All right. That's a very specific question.
Thank you, Mr. De Niro.
He's saying it with anger. He's angry at me. Like, yeah. I think it sounds pretty good in the room I'm doing it in. I've worked very hard. I had a kid make sound panels. I'm all set up in the bedroom.
Yeah, because you originally started in your garage.
Well, the old house, I got a new house.
Yeah. Right.
But the old house, it was a cluttered garage, and I was there for years. And then I got this new house that has a garage, but it already sort of had the work done. The family that lived there before had a kid out there that they didn't want in the house, I guess.
Okay.
And
they
but they put a bathroom. There was a full bathroom, and it looked perfect for a studio for me, right? So I get this house, and I love the house. And then I get tagged the week after I get the house that I knew it wasn't done on permit. They got to tell you that. But you roll the dice. You're like, oh, who's going to find out?
Yeah.
Well, I think the city sent people out, you know, to open houses to see if there's unpermitted work. So it's not on permit. So what's taken so long is where I live, you've got a couple of options. Either because the city has it down as a garage. So either you got to make it back into a garage.
Right.
Or you got to get the paperwork to make an accessory dwelling unit, which is basically make a house out of it.
Right.
So I went with that. So they're making it a house. I mean, it's ridiculously expensive.
What about your taxes? I assume it.
I think I don't know how that affects that. What
That'd
the
be living space, right? Probably.
Well, no, it's going to have its own address.
Yeah, because
you're saying it's going to be higher taxes.
I think it would have to be, right.
Oh, don't tell the city.
Oh, you're just like,
I mean, you basically have two residents. You have two homes on your property, then, right? If they're classifying it as a home, a separate home.
Wait, it's going to be a separate home
adjacent.
No, I mean it's a rentable property.
Oh, okay.
But it's not a separate address. Is
I think it does can have a separate. I think it does
like
have a
unit?
Separate like a unit.
In my years, I found that the state and the city usually demands some extra
man,
ways
you're
to
ruining
get...
everything.
I think they're right.
But it's a business location, so you can write.
I didn't even know if I can say that.
Unfortunately, we're in Philadelphia.
Right. No one.
You want to add a second show tonight?
I'm assuming the guy that tagged my house is not following me around.
Don't say anymore.
But that's the thing. It's like I have a studio that's going to have a kitchen in it. You can cook in there. We can make a...
That Robert guy on the phone, he's not a fan of the show. He's actually calling. He's a city employee.
Oh, Los Angeles. The guy.
Damn.
Wait, but that's crap. They nabbed you after you bought the house?
Usually you get ratted out with that stuff. Usually you've got a neighbor who sees you building.
Yeah.
But this thing had been built years ago. I can't figure it out.
I think your open house idea, that word got out as people were checking out the property, and that's probably it.
Yeah, I think that
makes the most sense.
But I'll tell you, the thing is going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be nice, and I'll go out there. I'm going to have a hard time deciding whether I should live in that house and just rent the main house or do the podcast.
You have options.
Love Preston and Steve and WMMR? Check out WMMR.com for more of everything that rocks.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
And it's brought to you by Red Robin. Red Robin believes that every meal should be meaningful, every moment joyful, and every bite blissful. Find your closest location at redrobinpa.com. Red Robin, yum.
Let's see. Where do we go? How about this one? If you have kids old enough to use your phone, you should password protect basically everything. 7-year-old boy in China managed to drain his grandfather's retirement savings by using the man's phone to tip live streaming hostesses.
So he was like online porn, like hookers.
I don't know. But they were live streaming hostesses. And the grandfather named Lee was shocked to find nearly $6,000 had disappeared from his account over the course of 3 days. After he checked his transaction records, he found almost all the money had been paid to Qiyi, however you pronounce that. It's one of the largest online video websites in China. The boy admitted that he had spent his grandpa's money to tip and buy presents for his favorite female video game live streamers on the site.
There you go. Porn. Okay.
Not porn. IQI said that it would offer a refund to the grandfather following an investigation. Animal rescuers in Britain responded to a home where they ended up removing a snake, and the snake had turned blue from the cleaning products inside the toilet where it was hiding.
Like a blue snake, like Tiny Bowl.
Yeah, the RSPCA said a family renovating the home said they had just purchased in Basildon, England, found a snake in the bathroom when the reptile...
I said this is a blue snake in this toilet.
reptile knocked over a lit candle. They found the animal had taken up residence in the toilet's tank. The snake was identified as a non-venomous rat snake and is believed to be someone's pet. It's being cared for by a veterinarian to make sure that it didn't ingest any of the blue cleaning fluid.
Yeah, you wouldn't want the snake to get sick.
This is terrible. A 56-year-old female hiker was killed by falling rock and ice at Yosemite National Park in California. Man. Yeah.
So we were just talking about Yosemite.
And they said that Zhang Wang was hiking on Yosemite's Mist Trail when she was hit by rock and ice. Now, while the trail is popular, it's closed at this time of year because of icy and hazardous conditions.
They always post that stuff, but I know people, they'll just do what they want to do. It's not like there's a guard sitting there.
In fact, the Park Service said that the trail closure is clearly marked, and there is a gate on the trail reminding visitors of the closure. She ignored the signs, went around the gate, and the incident happened on the trail. So they close those for a reason, gang.
You have things like that happen all the time where people will go on a trail or take an off-road vehicle onto a trail and then get trapped in snow or an avalanche. They don't realize it. Everything's being managed. You got to be careful.
Yep. This is disturbing. 800-year-old crusader from a crypt in a Dublin church has been decapitated by vandals. Archdeacon David Pierpoint said that the crusader's head had been severed from his body and,
this sucks, and
taken away.
You lived for 800 years.
No, he wasn't alive.
Oh.
It was a corpse.
Oh. Yeah.
And to go like
and
that?
And to go like that.
Come on.
You're 800 years old.
You, like, lived through plague after
plague. Everything. Oh. Older than our own country here.
The discovery was made as a tour guide was preparing to open the church for visitors on Monday afternoon. The archdeacon said he was upset and disappointed that the church had been targeted again by vandals. The crypt of Saint was vandalized in 1996.
I'm a crusader.
He said initially it was quite disgusting when he saw what had happened, but now it's just sad. Apparently, the crypt has been badly damaged, and several of the mummies, including the 400-year-old remains of a nun, had been desecrated in the incident. The crusader's body was turned over, and his head was removed. The crypt of St. Meekins was previously vandalized in 1996 when a group of teenagers broke in and took a number of mummified bodies from the coffins. They dragged them onto the grounds and seemed to be playing football with their heads.
That's just wrong.
He had it, thankfully.
It's called soccer over there.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's called football over there.
Oh, is
it? It's soccer here.
You're right.
That's just wrong.
I mean,
it's called soccer. Anyhow, they're trying to find out who did it. Steve, I thought this would be interesting specifically for you because you had a Great Dane when you were younger.
Yes.
Veterinarians in Arizona performed a C-section on a Great Dane to help her deliver 19 puppies.
What? Wild.
The Kingman Animal Hospital said that it took 11 staff members to perform the procedure on Saturday after the dog, and I think your dog's name was Clem, right?
Clem. Clementine Mount Valerie Rock.
This one is Cleo.
Cleo.
Was brought in with a different, with a difficult labor. They said the puppies are all healthy and Cleo's doing great after her C-section. The Great Danes typically have litters of about 8 puppies.
We will control the world.
but this had more than twice the number of the average.
One of the greatest dogs you could ever have. They're huge, but their disposition is so sweet, and they're great with kids.
Yeah, I actually have, in my mind, a list of types of dogs I need to own before I die, and Great Dane is definitely one of them. And they need to, like, Great Danes especially, they have to have a proper name.
Yes, you know what I mean? Yeah, they're bigger than most humans.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll do one more story and then wrap it up. Gwendolyn Agard's story. She had initially refused to talk about it on camera, but now she's doing it. She didn't see the big deal, but everyone else did. She's a 79-year-old woman, fended off a burglar as he tried to get inside her home. She had called 911, And she shot at the 20-year-old suspect twice with her 38 and 45.
Wow.
She was able to fend him off until deputies arrived to arrest him. And what's funny is what she said to him. She decided to tell her story, and she started with what she said. The first thing she told the man who dared to break into her home was, and I quote, "I said, mother effer, if you come any further, you're a dead son of a bitch."
I love that.
I know. She said she had heard a noise.
She's Joan Wick.
And she said, Joan Wick. She started her work and she had heard a noise. She knew that the sound wasn't normal, not taking any chances. She armed herself with a 38, and that's when she heard a louder noise. And then something hit her door, she recounted. The man was hitting the back door of her porch with a rubber mallet that he retrieved from a neighbor's barn. The glass shattered. He came inside, and he was naked.
Oh.
She said he didn't have no pants on. He was naked.
Not no pants, no how.
She tried to warn the man that she was armed and even fired a warning shot, but she says the man went on upstairs and started ransacking her home. And since the 38 wasn't working, she went over and grabbed her 45.
That's grandma for you.
She's looking at her going, yeah. All right, I got to get something bigger.
Give me a racket.
She called 911. She started giving 911 and giving them a play-by-play as she waited for the deputies to get there. She was actually scared when she was talking to them, but when the man tried to come downstairs,
she
fired again.
Hi, Grandma.
Agard fired again, to which the man asked in surprise, "Bitch,
hi, Grandma."
Hang on.
Yeah,
he said in surprise, "Bitch, are you trying to kill me?"
I love the language flying back and forth.
And her her reply to him was, "Oh, you finally got the message."
That's damn. A tough woman.
I love her.
Better. Yeah.
So the cops came and they ended up grabbing him. She said, "I don't know what his intention was, but I know what mine was if I had seen him." So she was going to take him out. Pretty funny. There you go. That's what I have in the bizarre file for you.
93.3 WMMR presents Preston and Steve's Totally Office Calendar 2020. Shot on location at the Met, Philadelphia. 12 magnificent months featuring the most gorgeous girls and our loveliest listeners. On sale now for just $15 in the MMR Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Order by this Friday to have it in time for the holidays, or get your hands on a free copy at an upcoming calendar raid while meeting the girls and members of the show. Details at WMMR.com. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
It's brought to you by New Jersey Transit Police Department, reminding you that we all need to work together to keep our transit system safe. Report suspicious activity to 1-888-TIPS-NJT or text your report to NJTPD.
What's going on this morning, Steve?
Well, red carpet events canceled for the premiere of Liam Neeson's new movie Cold Pursuit after a controversial interview in which he volunteered information about his concerning race and revenge. Neeson says that in light of the dust-up, he's glad he didn't talk about when he sold drugs to preschoolers.
Oh, my God.
Oh! Kendall Jenner telling Allure magazine that one of her worst days was when people noticed she had some acne during the 2018 Golden Globes. That said, Kendall did have to admit that even her acne has perfect skin and a tan.
Oh, my God.
And finally, Ozzy Osbourne, 70, was admitted to a hospital on Monday with a serious case of the flu. Ozzy had initially thought his stomach was upset from eating too much of his favorite snack, Tide Pods. Next, Hollywood Trash.
Our next guests are here to promote a film called Brittany Runs a Marathon. It's about a woman who gets her life together. So I think it's only obvious that we play a song about a dinosaur. to begin the interview, to walk the dinosaur is what we're going to play. I'll explain in a moment. But we want to welcome the writer and producer and stars of the film here. We have Paul Downs. And please, I'm going to butcher your last name.
No, but try it.
All right, so I would say Colezo.
Yeah, all right, Colezo.
Colezo.
You did it. Colezo
and Jillian Bell.
Yay. Oh, you butchered my name.
The easy one he screws up.
So we had a lengthy conversation about this song, Walk the Dinosaur.
Yeah.
And I guess, Paul, you've never heard this song in your life?
No, I mean, I probably blocked it out.
How do you block it out?
I'm sure it was associated with tons of childhood trauma.
That's it. In therapy, this comes up, I'm sure. Exactly. Don Was.
One of the first questions they asked us, they're like, you ever heard of that song?
Walk the Dinosaur?
Yeah, sure.
But these are my kind of guests that do that.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you know that song. But, Jillian, you had brought it up.
I love that song and Theodore, Theodore Rex. And Paul had never heard of Theodore Rex or the song.
I was watching the trailer to Theodore Rex just outside, and Whoopi Goldberg gets paired with a dinosaur, and that is a movie I'm going to see.
There's a lot of physical comedy, a lot of tail comedy.
Sure, yes. Getting in the way, knocking things over.
Oh, no, he knocked over a vase again.
In one scene, he steals cookies, and he can't eat them because he's a fake dinosaur, so he just throws them over his shoulder.
He doesn't have the arm length to hit his mouth. Yeah. Exactly. It's all rooted in science.
Yeah.
But Jillian, I have to tell you, as you came in, I'm a massive fan of yours.
I just think
you're a nuclear talent. Your improvisational stuff is great. And everything. You're one of these people, and we all talk about people when we see they're in the cast. I'm like, I'm on board.
Mm-hmm.
But your improvisational abilities, you started doing improv at like 8?
Yes, 8 years old.
And you were actually in classes at 8.
I was. My parents, I think, wanted to get rid of me for a good solid hour.
But I think that is an incredible training ground for, you know, I did stand up a little while and did some improvisational stuff, and being able to just think on your feet, or also just to respond and comedically act, it has been a blessing in your life.
It's very helpful.
Yeah.
It's a good tool, especially for comedies nowadays, because everybody, usually most comedies, they want us to improvise. Most movies I've done, they'll say, let's do it as is, and then we'll do 18 takes of whatever you want. And so you just kind of got to go with it.
It's all because I've shown your 22 Jump Street rapid fire list of insults is just great. You know, and I'll show that to people all the time. And it's funny because now there's like a YouTube hole you can fall down. That's all that sort of additional stuff that usually ends up on Blu-ray, you know, where they're riffing lines improvisation.
Oh, I would love to watch that. I like watching bloopers when I'm in a blue mood. I love It's Always Sunny bloopers. Those are my favorite.
Oh, my God.
They're so good.
Yes, we were just talking about that. And there's something about that's extraordinary. But I want to talk about the movie, which I think is very, is kind of cool because there are a couple issues that I think are addressed in it. You're a woman who's her life is not really going where she wants it to go, looking for some direction, and explain the genesis of your character.
She's sort of stuck, you know, where we've all been, where it's sort of like, how do I move forward?
Right.
If your career's not going well, if you know, you haven't found the right person, whatever it may be, and she sort of figures, well, how can I do something for myself? And she starts to run, and then she sets this huge, almost seemingly impossible goal of running the New York City Marathon.
We've known people, a number of people, who've done this, and even who have shocked us, who will run. A comedian friend of ours, Burt Kreischer, he's a guy who just out of the blue starts doing these, running these races and Ironman things. I want to try this. I want to do this.
Incredible what you can push your body to do.
Right. So part of the character's transformation is you know, getting into shape. You were not asked to do this, but you took it upon yourself to do it as well and drop some weight, correct?
Yeah, I lost 40 pounds for the role.
Wow.
On my own, yeah. Like you said, they didn't ask me to do that. But I sort of thought it would connect me to the character better. There were some things in the script that I thought, oh, this is me. You know, I identify with this woman wholeheartedly. And there were other parts where I just thought, I don't know why she's doing that. I've never gone through that before.
Right.
And I thought, if I go on this physical journey, it'll help the emotional journey.
You know, it's a funny thing, though. As you start to do stuff like that, and I think you guys are addressing it as well, is that a lot of times people who you would assume would support you start to like, what is this about?
Well, it's interesting.
Yeah.
And the film talks about that too, like toxic friendships or relationships and how you can sort of start to see who's in your corner.
And you sort of get undercut. And it's, I guess we've all done it at some point or not. I don't know if it's born of jealousy or whatever it is. And it's a human thing, but it does, you know, it does start to happen if someone's doing well on a weight loss program, or they're doing something with, you know, exercise or getting their life around it. Maybe it makes people feel, maybe I'm not doing enough. And so they tend to respond less than supportively.
It's interesting when you start to change your life in any matter.
Right.
And if you see if your friends root you on or if they go against it, some people don't like change like that.
Mm-hmm. And Paul, the basis of this story comes from reality, yes?
Yeah, I was in my mid-20s living with my best friend Brittany, who is not Brittany Forgler, who Jillian plays, but Brittany Forgler is inspired by Brittany O'Neill. And she was just the funniest person I'd ever met. She made herself the butt of a joke. She was just always willing to be humiliated and have a good time, and sort of like we all were. But she wasn't going, her life wasn't headed in the direction direction she wanted it to be headed, and she had to figure out how she could get on a path that she was proud of. And we were living together, and she went for her first run, and I thought, this is a movie, and I started outlining it.
It's funny, because when you find that one foundational thing, like that, you know, that one thing that you do, you can build on that and do other things, and it sort of helps get your life in order. But that, like, for example, I'm sure the character Brittany, if running, that thing fell out of her life, everything else would start to fall into disarray. For her, but you just need that one thing.
Yeah, for her, it's about setting goals and pushing yourself and testing yourself to see how far you can go in a certain area. And then that comes after that, you start feeling pride and you start feeling hope and you start allowing yourself to dream. And that takes place in all areas of your life. Everything falls into place.
It's a simple thing, but it's hard to do it. It's hard with anything like this.
And there's complications that we don't always talk about in transformation stories. There's an emotional journey there. And sometimes you can struggle internally, and I think that's a beautiful part of the film that most transformation stories don't hit on.
That's what they by the way, it's getting great critical reviews, and it's doing very well, and they comment on that, because a lot of times, no matter how earnest the movie tries to be, they'll Hollywoodize it, and it'll, oh my God, they just nailed it. And so, you know, something that resonates a little bit more truthfully is this approach, because it's not always cut and dry. So let me ask you, do you yourself, were you enamored now of running, or?
I do enjoy it, actually. At first, I was very nervous to start running, and it's a vulnerable thing.
Do you feel that everyone's looking at you when you do it?
Yep.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, but I was doing it in my neighborhood, so everybody's kind of keeping to themselves there. But, yeah, it's hard to start something that you don't know if you'll be good at, and I was definitely starting from scratch. I looked up on Pinterest how to start running. I looked up this thing that said couch to 5K, and it just sort of...
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, just informed me how to do the first steps, and that's what this movie was about, like baby steps, those first steps to push yourself towards your dreams.
Paul, Jillian mentions trying something that you're not sure if you're good at or not. Is this your only time directing or first time directing?
The first time I ever directed. And that's the funny thing is, you know, Jillian and I, when we first met, talk about this movie. She had never done a dramatic leading role before, and I had never directed anything before. And so we were both sort of looking at each other, placing bets on each other, thinking, can we do this together? And so we really... part of, I think, what drove both of us to do as well as we could in this process was making sure we didn't let the other one down.
Mm. But it's funny because there's humor, obviously, inherent to this. Anybody who goes through a transformation of this kind, especially on the earlier part of your life where you're finding out that before the journey, as you say, think the way you're living is not the best, and so that's part of it. But that makes the heartfelt part of it resonate more, you know, if you can connect. Because I find that I think we can all connect to someone who's a little, you know, self-deprecating. And it's easier, you know, sometimes when someone starts, if you already had somebody who was just, you know, a marathon runner to begin with, it'd be like, well, this is...
People can't relate to that journey.
They can't relate to that.
They can relate to having trouble, struggling to make that first step towards anything. The marathon is symbolic.
It's
daunting. It can be anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Jillian, in the first part of the trailer, you look terrible. and it's not just...
I look terrible?
Yeah.
That's hurtful.
By the end... No. By the end of the trailer, you look phenomenal, and you look like you... But it's not just your body. It's the hair is bad, the skin is bad. It just seems like when you go through the transformation throughout, it's 2.5 minutes of a trailer. So I haven't seen the full movie yet. But it seems like they took time to make sure that you were uncomfortable in your skin at the beginning of the movie, not only physically, but emotionally, and dealing with this person who wasn't going anywhere. I think that they took that and made it physical as well. Is that true, or am I misreading it?
No, I mean, I think there were certain things that, you know, were different about her looks from the beginning of the film to the end, but I know what you're talking about. Like, the skin is a little bit, like, she's dehydrated.
Yeah.
And I mean, I thought her hair was great, but sure.
I like it.
and her body is what I looked like when I first got the script. And then I lost the weight to go through that journey. And as soon as I was done with it, I sort of wanted to figure out for me now who do I want to be and how do I feel comfortable in my own body. And it's a beautiful conversation. It's all a part of the conversation, and I wanted to experience it from top to end, because it's important. It's important that I went through that so that I could speak to that experience.
Have you guys ever gone to the doctor, because I'm speaking off the trailer as well, where they've sat you down and, okay,
here's some stuff we got to change.
Yes.
Here's some things. And you start telling, you know, what your lifestyle isn't like. And you're like, wow, I didn't know I was doing all this wrong stuff. And it's a lot to take in. It's a lot to consider. And changing your life is no easy step, you know?
It's a bit of a harsh wake-up call.
Yeah, because I've certainly had it a couple of times.
I have, too.
He just lost a whole bunch of weight, Preston, himself. How much did you take off, Preston?
This time, like 40 yeah. pounds, yeah.
Yeah.
That's about 40 pounds. I just did that on my own. But years and years ago, I was like, you know, 70 pounds overweight. It was ridiculous. And the doctor's like, okay, I'm gonna tell you some stuff you don't want to hear, but this is what we got to do. And I was able to get it together. So this type of story really speaks to me, and I think to a lot of people.
That's the thing we figured out when we were doing this, is we were telling a story about people in their 20s who were trying to get their life in order and find their way into adulthood. And it turns out everyone always is trying to figure out what their life is and trying to get on the right foot and trying to find their path and their footing. So it seems, as we've been showing this across the country, that people of all ages, of all genders, of all types are relating to the character.
And it need not be about a marathon, though. As you said, it's analogous to anything, any decision in life. So when you started, you were at the Groundlings for a while,
yes.
and then you were a writer for SNL. I think you were sharing an office with Kristen Wiig. Was that the case, or are you writing together with her?
I wasn't, but I wrote with her a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, we had similar senses of humor. Weird, off.
But, how close to your characters are you, actually?
I won't lie. I'm not exactly like my character on Workaholics, but she's in there a little bit. I'm an odd lady.
That's a great character.
I enjoy, you know, dinosaur songs and bats.
Before this movie, Jillian did a movie where she pooped her pants. Yes. Are you like her?
Oh, that's like my real life.
That's how I met Utkarsh, who's in the film. He was in Game Over Man. He had like a real part, and then I came in to do just like a funny cameo. But my character, I can't curse on this.
Right? No.
But I will just say, she messes her pants.
Yeah, she craps her pants. Yeah.
And she did method for that, too.
Full on method.
You have to go through that experience.
Hey, Brando would have, that's all that
matters. I ate a lot of bean sandwiches. Don't think it's a thing? Look it up.
Beans.
You've done voiceover sub for, right?
I have. Anna?
You're
on
Gravity Falls, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a great show.
Gravity Falls.
Yeah. And because I'm just listening to the sound of your voice, and you'd be perfect for, doing Disney work and
stuff
like that.
Thank you. I'm on a show that's coming out called Bless the Hearts. It's coming on after The Simpsons.
They've been advertising the hell out of it. It looks really good.
Is that Oh, bless your heart?
Yes.
Like
that's what you say when you think someone's stupid, but you don't want to say that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that we have you here in the studio, we have had so many of 22 Jump Street in our studio, and I'm excited to have you here. We've had Jonah Hill here. Channing Tatum,
wonderful.
Wyatt Russell, Jillian Bell, Ice Cube, and the Lucas Brothers.
I've worked with Ice Cube twice now. Can you believe that?
Yeah, well,
best friends.
Fist fight. So that was with Charlie Day, right?
Yes.
Charlie Day in the studio.
Yeah. So it's
all my friends.
El Tonto comes out later this year, right? You're going to be in El Tonto with Charlie Day.
I am.
Yeah. And we just had Aaron Scotty, who's one of the producers. He's from this area. He's in from Concha Hawk
and wonderful.
Circle of Life.
Yeah.
I just talked to Charlie about El Tonto, and he's so excited about how it turned out. I can't wait to see it.
So I mean, your career at this point is you're becoming one of those people that like is a go to, and so. With the performing and stuff, do you still get a chance, besides improvisationally, do you still get a chance to write, or are you...
I am. I'm writing right now. I'm writing a movie.
Now
I'm working on the rewrite. Not in this very moment, but...
That's
what
how
if I
you
was?
Are.
What you're if I had a computer next to me?
You're like Dr. Manhattan.
And I'm just like, exterior radio building.
Well, semi-built radio building at this point. So.
Anytime we ask you a question, just hold up one finger.
Yeah, hang on, I got a joke.
That's a great line, yeah.
But I'm writing something right now.
That's very cool.
What is this one? We're both writing.
So now that you get your first movie out of the gate, gets this kind of attention, we always think that there's just an onslaught of stuff coming your way. Does that happen, or are you still in the... word getting out stage and...
It's sort of both. We were talking about that on the way in, reading scripts and trying to figure out what's next, but I'm working on my own script that's very different than this one, so hopefully I'll be done with that one soon, too.
Hey, when does the actual New York City Marathon
November.
Take place? November?
Yeah.
Did you guys shoot at it?
We shot at the actual New York City Marathon.
Okay.
In 2017.
In 2017, and it was on daylight savings time, so I think a bunch of the day that you change your clock, so I think people were an hour late.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. No. I know. Oh, my God, wow. Dude.
I know, but it was really a magical experience.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, unreal. We shot, I don't want to give too much away, but we shot parts of the race, and we used their equipment, and we, you know, there were 50,000 people there.
Well, that makes it good. Did you see any of the legendary moments where people have to, like, you know, pee outside or, you know, their nipples were bleeding? I mean, it
there was
get
a lot of that. Yeah.
Really?
Well, I didn't even
that
know
is
this.
The unattractive part for, yeah. for me, the defecating on people's yeah. lawns and all of that but stuff, which is part and parcel of the whole thing.
There
right?
are volunteers who are just on the sidelines to Vaseline your legs.
Yeah. Really?
That's their job. Yeah, and some
what major city doesn't have that anyway?
Exactly, yeah. All year. And their these men, these muscle men, their calves were coming through, their muscles were coming through their skin.
And oh,
yeah.
my gosh.
It was really, it's really an
you're not supposed
thing.
To run that far. That's,
that's
why.
Right, that's right.
You're not supposed to.
It's right.
All right, so I'm going to ask you, as you're chronicling Britney's life, is she aware of this, and was she okay? And if she was she okay with it?
So it waited a few months.
Okay.
And I said to her, we were on our couch, and I said, you know, I'm not sure if I should tell you this, but I'm writing a movie about you.
Mm, that's awesome.
And she said, what's it called? And I said, it's called Britney Runs a Marathon. And
12
she said,
Years a Slave.
Yeah. Oh, man. She said, I said, what's, she said, what's it called? I said, it's called Britney Runs a Marathon. She said, how fast does she run it in? And then, you know, I talked to her about the themes of it, but her goal in real life was to go under 4 hours, which is like a really impressive.
Wow. Yeah. Because I just know as somebody who's had their struggles in life with whether it be smoking cigarettes or, you know, drinking or weight, because I've gained and lost weight many, many times. When you sort of enter into this area of like trying to quit or trying to get started with running, you don't want to tell anybody because
yeah.
failure is a real possibility. It's
yeah.
a very, very big possibility. So like, you know, the times that I've quit smoking, it's like, I'm not going to say anything until maybe like a month in.
Right.
You know, I haven't drank in 7.5 years. I didn't say anything on the air anniversary. Like, you know what
wow.
I mean? Like I just,
wow.
you just sort of like, you know, so
yeah, you want to bury it.
Yeah, you know.
Just in case you fail.
Just in case you fail.
It's a built. Well, other people will use it the other way. They'll tell everyone because they figure they'll be shamed if they do. But it's your personal mechanism.
Yeah.
You know, it's what yeah. you do.
Yeah, totally. I'm real Brittany, her first run, she was a biker. And even when we fell out of touch, I would see a whiz go by in a business coat. And I would think, oh, that was Brittany. But she went for her first run. It was 2 miles on a treadmill at the gym.
Wow.
And yeah, and she really like impressed herself. And seeing her come home and feel that pride and feel that hope was really exciting.
That's awesome.
I love that they didn't make, you know, like nobody, that you just did it on your own for the weight loss because that's, you know, that's.
It's
not the message of the film.
Right.
Yeah,
it's not really about that.
It's
a hook to get the audience yeah. to understand what the impetus is for this character's journey. But really, we're telling a human story about someone who's just trying to do better.
Yeah. Awesome. I think a lot of people are trying to do that. Britney Runs a Marathon is the name of the movie. Hey, good luck with this, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks so
for
coming.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Have a dinosaur song.
We were thrilled.
Yeah.
Give some love, Jillian Bell.
Yeah.
Oh, Brittany runs a marathon.
The Preston and Steve Show podcast. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.